give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. Remember that.
Say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing your wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, talk to me, sister.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile,
now
Asian,
that's
Latino,
the wake-up call.
That we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle. Black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world and how they affect us. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Good morning. Welcome to Mondays at 9. We are right a few days, a little over a week, before the Iraqi elections. And for those of you that are keeping count, taking the numbers, know that in an election that was held recently, where the Palestinians elected their new president, about a million people we're talking about, over 800 media people, poll watchers, turned out to monitor that election. In Afghanistan, when there was an election, about 144 international poll watchers turned out to make certain that that election could be analyzed and assessed and determine whether it was transparent and fair and open. And as we sit here today, Monday, January 24th, 2005, there are no, I will repeat, no, that would be zero, international monitors that are set to monitor the election of approximately, of several million people. Elections need to be transparent. Elections need to be accessible. We would do well to do that in this country. Having said that, there was an election by the Palestinians. And we need to talk about the significance of this election. And that is what we are going to be doing this morning. I have as a guest a professor of political science out of the University of Kansas, Deborah Gerner, joining us from Lawrence, Kansas this morning. Professor, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm outstanding. How are you?
I'm great.
Let's talk about this election. But before we talk about the election, let's talk about what happened to precipitate this election, the death of Yasser Arafat. Talk to us about Yasser Arafat.
Yasser Arafat was probably one of the most controversial international figures of our lifetime. To some people, he was a terrorist. To many others, he was a national leader. He was clearly an icon and was...
Well, he won the Nobel Peace Prize.
He won the Nobel Peace Prize, and he was, I think, the most important individual in keeping the Palestinian issue on the world agenda, something that did not occur for many other post-colonial national independence movement.
And let's talk about that for one second. What do you mean by keeping this on the world agenda? What did he do?
Well, he did a lot of things. He went to the United Nations repeatedly once he had been invited. In fact, he was able to get the Palestine Liberation Organization status as an observer at the United Nations, which was something quite new.
And that's huge.
That was huge. It was a very big deal. He was able to hold the Palestinian community together, which had been defeated and dispossessed and dispersed after the 1948 war with Israel. They had no state to defend them. They had no territory to hold them. There was no political strategy that really united them. And Yasser Arafat provided all of that.
And he also was part of a secular, monarchical.
Exactly.
He was part of that. And what does that represent?
It's a trite thing to say, but it is an end of an era, in a sense, having him die, because he is one of the very last of those secular, non-monarchical Arab leaders who came to power during that decolonization period of the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s. There's really just Muammar Gaddafi is the only one of those leaders who are left. All of the others are gone.
And in terms of could it be said that he legitimized the PLO?
Absolutely. He legitimized the PLO. He legitimized the Palestinian people. He was the symbol of Palestinian identity for all Palestinians. And as time went on, and especially after the Oslo agreements in 1993, which were very controversial among Palestinians themselves, there would be individuals who disagreed with Arafat politically, but that didn't change the fact that he remained the most important symbol of Palestinian identity. He did something else which many people really ignore, and that is that in making the decision to sign the Oslo Accords with, in my view, all of their many flaws, Arafat clearly legitimized Israel as a state in the region. And that's something that people forget about, but that led then to several peace treaties with surrounding Arab states and the resumption of diplomatic relations with other Arab states. So he was an incredibly important figure.
And in terms of the phrase that you use, Palestinian identity,
right?
He did that through a number of ways. In terms of he was very clear about his love of his people, his culture, and embracing and being very clear in terms of what it was that the Palestinian people were about.
I think that's true. I remember very clearly the first time that I met him and interviewed him. I was with my spouse, and he was giving us a hard time that we didn't have children. And I said, well, what about you? And, you know, you're not married. You have no children. And he said, I'm married to Palestine. Now, of course, eventually he did marry and have a daughter. But he did camps for children to teach them about computers. The Palestine Liberation Organization funded a huge number of cultural activities, especially in the refugee camps, not only in the West Bank and Gaza, but throughout the region, especially in Lebanon, in Syria, in Jordan, where children would learn about their past. You can ask any Palestinian child who lives outside of mandatory Palestine, the Palestine before 1948, where they're from, and they'll tell you, oh, I'm from Jaffa, I'm from this town, I'm from that town. So he did a great deal to say, you should be proud to be Palestinian. It's a great thing to be Palestinian, and don't let anyone tell you that you're just another Arab or that that's something to be ashamed of. It's something to be proud of. And you see that really still today with the way in which the dancing and the embroidery and all of the cultural aspects of Palestinian life have been maintained, which, is, again, is very unusual for a family, for a community that has, to a large extent, lived in a diaspora.
Now, in terms of how how the new president of Palestine is, or at least of occupied Palestine, would it be fair to would it be a fair comparison to make about the kind of like the and although this I don't know if this is completely accurate, but within the Democratic Party right now, we have a within the Democratic National Committee, the DNC, we're having a struggle for or an election for a new president.
Right.
And the people that are running for it are very moderate types of people, very, very low-key type of people, with the exception of Howard Dean. And one of the reasons why Howard Dean is not being embraced within the traditional Democratic, or at least the DLC, the Democratic Leadership Council, is because he has taken a stance and that he's considered too not a moderate. Is that kind of what is happening right now with the election of the new president, that he is being embraced because he is that moderate and is not the clearly defined person in their issues as Yasser Arafat was?
It's very difficult to get a good handle on Mahmoud Abbas, or as he's often referred to, Abu Mazen. And there's a couple of reasons for that. First, of course, the election itself doesn't tell us very much about what the Palestinian people really think.
Why is that?
Well, because there was another obvious person who could have been running against him, and that was Marwan Barghouti, who is a very popular leader who grew up under Israeli occupation, whereas Abu Mazen, Mahmoud Abbas, like Arafat, left after Palestine was occupied. And Marwan Barghouti is in jail right now, in an Israeli jail, and he in the end was persuaded by the political movement Fatah, of which he and Mahmoud Abbas are both members, not to run. He's more radical.
He's closer to Yasser Arafat.
Yeah, he supports the use of violence in the occupied territories against the occupation forces. And Mahmoud Abbas feels that the Palestinians have gained very little from the last 4 years of Intifada. So had Marwan Barghouti run, then we would have had a better sense of what the Palestinian community really thought. Also,
but we can get a sense of what the international community thinks,
right,
with the decision by Barghouti not to run and the election
Sure, absolutely. But let me just add that in addition, we also did not have Hamas, the religious movement, running. And so it's hard to know from the Palestinian perspective what it means that Mahmoud Abbas won, other than that he was the obvious follower of Arafat. He was one of the people who helped found Fatah with Arafat. He was one of the old guard. But to address your question specifically, I think it is true that he has been more moderate. He's been opposed to the outbreak of violence that happened with the Intifada. But I don't want to sell him too short, because he also has a strong core set of principles that he is not going to compromise on. And they include things like a Palestinian state within the borders of 1967, East Jerusalem as the capital of that state. And very, very important, he has continually said that he supports the right in principle of the refugees' ability to return to their homeland. And so while he is less assertive than Arafat, and he certainly doesn't have the charisma of Arafat, he's much more low-key than Arafat, I think that it remains to be seen if he can be as tough as Arafat.
But he's starting this at the age of almost 70.
Exactly.
You know, so,
how
is this going to work?
He's part of that same old group. They were all about the same age, and they've all now been assassinated or are part of the ruling elite. There's him, and there's the prime minister, and one or two others. They're all part of that small group around Arafat.
How old was Yasser Arafat?
When he died?
No, when he began.
Oh, when he began? Oh, he was a teenager. I mean, you know, he was in college.
So we're talking, I'm talking about as the head of the Palestinians. How old was he when he was elected?
Oh, I'd have to count backwards because he first became head of the PLO in the in the late 60s. And so we could count backwards, but I'm not sure exactly how old he was.
But it's
certainly a whole lot younger than he is now. What we've got is basically the same people running Israel and Palestine that were involved in the initial creation of the State of Israel and the initial dispossession of the Palestinian people back in 1948. It's the same group of people. They're all in their 70s now.
And we're going to have to take a break, but when we come back, Professor, I would like to talk about what weight and what impact will the new president's position on the use of force have on the Palestinians. This is Liz Brown. This is Mondays at 9. I'm talking to Professor Deborah Gerner, professor of political science at the University of Kansas, joining us from Lawrence, Kansas, to talk about the death of Yasser Arafat, the election of a new president, and what this means for the Palestinian people. We'll be back. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Best of the Wake Up Call. Stick around for more following the traffic and weather. Good morning, St. Louis. 27 minutes after the hour of 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. Let's take a look at your traffic and your weather. Highway 40 eastbound is slow from 141 through Mason and Spady through McKnight. Northbound 270 at 44 through Big Bend. Look for some delays there going on. Eastbound 70 from Bryan Road through 79. Look for congestion. And westbound 5570 from 3rd Street onto the Poplar Street Bridge, you can expect no delays at this hour. Martin Luther King Bridge westbound from the Gravel Pit through the Landing. Traffic is starting to build. And westbound 270 at Ladue Road and Olive. Look for some delays due to a disabled vehicle. It's just south of Olive. Eastbound 370 from 170 through Spencer Road. Look for first aid responding to an odor in the air. It's reported just east of Highway 70. That is a look at this hour's traffic. Now let's take a look at your WGNU weather forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Thursday. Mostly sunny today with a high in the lower 50s. This evening, mostly clear with a low in the lower 30s. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high in the upper 50s. And Thursday, they're expecting partly sunny skies in the morning, mostly cloudy throughout the day, and the highs to remain around the mid-50s. Currently, we have cloudy conditions. And our current temperature sits at 27 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 27 degrees with some scattered clouds. That's a look at this hour's traffic and weather. Stay tuned for the top of the hour. More news traffic and weather as well. But up next, it's more of the best of the wake-up call. Liz Brown is out today. She will be back probably Monday of next week. But more of the wake-up call best of series is on the way. This is AM 920 WGNU.
Join me weekday afternoons from 2 till 4 on AM 920 WGNU. And I look forward to hearing from you. If you have problems with a personal work or family relationship, call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA for the issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU. And for the personal issues that matter most, join me, Dr. Laura, now from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Then go do the right thing.
Prizes awarded on WGNU will be held for pickup at the radio station for 30 days. After 30 days, all items become the sole property of WGNU Radio to be disposed of at our discretion. In the case of event tickets, tickets will be held for 30 days or until the date of the event, whichever comes first. Prizes must be picked up at our studios, which are located at 265 Union Boulevard in St. Louis, unless otherwise specified.
We all know the scenario. You see a for sale sign and think, I want to invest, but real estate is complicated. Well, help is here. Hi, I'm Lorraine Davis, home mortgage consultant with Wells Fargo.
And I'm Jacques Land of the 100 Black Men of Metropolitan St. Louis.
We're the host of WGNU's newest show, Let's Get Wealthy. Our show provides real techniques for the everyday consumer on how to own a home and build wealth.
Tune in to Let's Get Wealthy every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Because today is the day to get wealth for yourself. Sponsored by the 100 Black Men of Metropolitan St. Louis, Wells Fargo Housing Foundation, and produced by the Platinum Group.
Is your church, school, or nonprofit organization holding an upcoming event, or does it have an ongoing program? We can help you get the word out free of charge here at WGNU. Just send a flyer or written information to WGNU Radio, Public Service Department, 265 Union Boulevard, St. Louis, Missouri, 63108. We ask 2 weeks lead time for any upcoming event. WGNU reserves the right to edit or reject any submission due to content and time considerations.
This is Head Thumping Talk Radio on WGNU.
Scientists have discovered a way to reanimate dogs that have been dead for 3 hours. They fill you up with salt. They season you is what they do. It's a marinade, for lack of a better way to put it. So I guess realistically speaking, they could do this in China, right? So they fill the dog full of salt water. If it doesn't work out, the dog dies. Hey, you know, General Chow's chicken in the end. It all works out. Something about the zombie dog where you put salt water in them, kill them, and then revive them hours later, and the idea that it's intended for human trials. Who would volunteer for that?
Brett Rosen, Thursday mornings at 10 a.m. on WGNU.
This is the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
Now we take you back to more of the best of the wake-up call on AM 920 WGNU.
It's not the big moon that excites me. The thrills and delights me. Oh no, yes, just as many as you. It is your sweet conversation that brings this sensation. Oh no, just an image of you.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back to Mondays at 9. I am talking to Professor Deborah Gerner, Professor of Political Science, University of Kansas, joining us from Lawrence, Kansas. We're talking about the Middle East without Yasser Arafat. Professor, welcome back.
Thank you.
We were talking on the way. The question I posed on the way posed to you on the way out was how the new president of occupied Palestine, how his position on the use of force will, what kind of impact that will have.
This is a question that is very, very much in the news right now, because just in the last 24 hours, he has apparently negotiated an arrangement, a deal, with the groups among the Palestinians who have been using violence against Israel, saying that as long as Israel does not use violence against them, they will not make any attacks on against Israeli targets. Now, there have been these kinds of deals in the past, and they've always broken down. And I've actually tried to do a study to see why they break down and when they break down. And what generally happens is that Israel engages in a targeted assassination, which then causes the so-called calm period to disintegrate. But I think that...
And can I just interrupt just for a second? Because
sure.
This might be kind of a macabre type of a question, but how is it interpreted that when Israel engages in an act of violence against the Palestinian people, when we have Israel using a lot of it, the defenses and the claims that we're hearing a lot in this country was it last week where a pregnant woman was on her way to the hospital to deliver her baby, mm-hmm. and her car was hit, the driver was killed, and two other
right.
people in the car. The woman later went on to the hospital to have the baby. Is that an act? Would that be considered an act of violence?
I would certainly consider it so. When we look at the death toll statistics, it's very difficult in a war situation to get good statistics,
mm-hmm.
but it's quite clear if you use Israeli statistics for Israeli deaths and Palestinian statistics from the Palestine Red Crescent Society for Palestinian deaths, that there's been a very consistent ratio of at least three Palestinians killed for every one Israeli killed. And from my point of view, any civilian who's killed, that's horrible. But there is a lot that goes on, and I don't think it's a macabre question at all. I think it's a very reasonable one. There are many events which occur which don't even show up in these statistics, and you just gave a good example of that.
So when we say that the Palestinian people, that a deal has been brokered, that the Palestinian will not use violence unless violence is used against them, and when we have Israel saying that we suspected that there was a terrorist in that car, no evidence, no proof, and no investigation afterwards, how, if those types of acts are going to continue to happen, how do we... Is this decision or is this agreement meaningful?
I truly don't know. And the reason I say that is that I'm sitting here in Lawrence, Kansas. And I think that even I've been monitoring for the last 24 hours every news media source I can find based in the region trying to find out what this means. But you're raising a very fair point. My hunch, unfortunately, is that there will be additional violence and that the period of calm is not going to last for precisely the reason that you outlined.
And again, if we have a state that is doing this kind of preemptive strike
right.
against terrorism, how does it ever end?
I think that depends very much on how much the Israeli government wants this to end. It's pretty clear from public opinion polls that the majority of the Palestinian people are willing to have a mutual recognition of identity. They're willing to have borders and territorial exchange. They're willing to have security arrangements. They want the conflict ended. Similarly, a majority of Israeli people want this conflict ended. We now have Mahmoud Abbas saying that he's prepared to do what it takes in terms of trying to halt the violence being done by some of the groups associated with the Palestinians. What we have not really seen is Ariel Sharon's government saying we will stop engaging in targeted assassinations. Until we see some sense that the Israeli government is equally prepared to make concessions, I don't think it will end.
How does the world view the Palestinian people in terms of a willingness to make concessions as opposed to how it views Israel?
Those of us who live in the United States and don't follow the international media or don't travel, would be quite shocked to realize that the United States stands alone in its very strong support of Israel. The vast majority of the international community has been very condemnatory of Israel's policies against the Palestinians and has been for decades.
You would never know that in America.
No, you wouldn't know that. But time and time again, the United Nations will have votes where there will be, you know, 193 people supporting a condemnatory resolution, and then there will be the United States, Israel, and I kid you not, Micronesia saying, being against it. And that's it. I'm perfectly willing to say that at some time the United States might be right and other countries might be wrong, but when the entire world holds one position and the United States holds a different position, I'm not willing to say that we're right and the whole world is wrong, or that the whole world is anti-Jewish. I don't think that that's true. I think the world is against the policies of the state of Israel, which is quite different than being anti-Jewish.
Now, in terms of the wall.
The wall.
The
barrier.
Yeah, it's hardly a wall. This concrete monstrosity, 25-foot tall concrete barrier. Where does the new president stand on that, and how will that issue factor into the negotiations for a ceasefire, the negotiations for a peace between the two?
Clearly, Mahmoud Abbas is opposed to the barrier. Whether he can do anything about it is not clear at all.
Because we continue with the land grabs. We continue with the wall is
exactly.
Not complete. The wall is not complete.
The International Court of Justice has condemned the building of the wall. Even the Israeli Supreme Court has condemned aspects of the building of the barrier, particularly when it involves the confiscation of additional land. And yet it continues to happen. It's as though nothing that the international community says makes any difference whatsoever, as long as the United States is continuing to support Israel.
And give us some aspects of this barrier, because I really think it needs to be underscored what this thing is and what this thing does.
Well, let me do that by telling you about a friend of mine, very quickly, who lives three houses away from the barrier. She lives technically in the Jerusalem side, but three houses away from her is this 28 feet tall, a concrete thing with ditches on one side and lots of barbed wire, and the school that she runs for free is on the other side of the barrier in Abu Dis, an Arab village. So every day she has to either find ways around the wall where it hasn't yet been built, or find places where they've built ladders to climb over the barrier and try to avoid any Israeli military who might shoot people for climbing over the barrier.
Excuse me? That's how she goes to work
every
day?
That's how she goes to work, yeah. To run this school that she makes no money on. She simply does as a service to the children of Abu Dis, but she makes no money on it whatsoever. She's just a wonderful, she was a human rights worker and a wonderful, wonderful individual. But that's how she gets to work. Many other people can no longer reach their agricultural land. Some villages have now been cut off.
Where are these checkpoints?
Wells.
Where are these checkpoints for her? Where are these checkpoints that we hear about?
For her, the checkpoints are not as far away as for some other people, and she's very fortunate compared to many people because she holds a Jerusalem ID.
Mm.
And so she at least has some flexibility, but if you hold a West Bank ID, you're totally unable to move. And so that means that if the well for your village is on the other side of the wall, your village can't get water. That's it. If your olive trees are on the other side of the wall, there's talk about giving special permits to people so that they can cross over and work their land. But these permits get promised, and then it's a year later, and the permit still hasn't appeared. There's a number of cases that Israeli attorneys have taken up on behalf of Palestinians where they have not yet succeeded. So it's been completely devastating to the Palestinian economy, which had already been damaged by the occupation.
And then aren't there also other aspects to the this barrier in terms of the length of it, in comparison to the actual length around the Palestinian people and their land?
Oh, well, it's huge. I mean, first off, think about the Berlin Wall. The Berlin Wall that divided East and West Berlin was only a third as high, and it was quite short. This barrier goes all the way, well, they say it goes all the way along the so-called Green Line, the line that divided the West Bank from Israel and Gaza from Israel, except that it doesn't. It continually cuts into the West Bank. So the limited area that the Palestinians had left after the 1948 war, further land is being taken away. And many times villages are totally encircled by this wall so that it's as though they're living in little ghettos or Bantustans.
And in terms of the argument that the Israeli government would use, that the erection of these barriers has reduced the number of attacks on the Israeli people, has that been verified, or is that something that we can look at as accurate?
It's impossible to know whether or not the barrier is what has led to a decrease. It is the case that the number of Israelis who have been killed has been reduced slightly over a period of several years. But the causal relationship is something that's very, very difficult to measure. And I think as long as the barrier goes up, the level of anger is increasing, and people will find ways to address the wall. They will find ways to get around it.
And the really kind of sickening component about this barrier is that it already exceeds lengthwise the amount the length around the city, and they're not finished with the barrier is not completed.
Oh no, it's got way more to go. And what it's really doing is repeating what we saw some years ago in Gaza, where Gaza was created to be a humongous jail, where the whole of the Gaza Strip is surrounded by barriers, and there's just two ways out, and those ways can be closed. And so instead of being in a small jail, you're simply in a somewhat larger jail.
And we're going to take a break. I'm talking to Deborah Gerner, professor of political science, University of Kansas, joining us from Lawrence, Kansas. We're talking about the Middle East without Arafat. I'll get to a few of the calls when we get back. This is Liz Brown, Mondays at 9. Stay with us.
And you're listening to the best of the wake-up call right here at AM 920 WGNU.
St. Louis, this is George Cotton.
And I'm Phil Wilson.
We're your hosts for The Real Deal with George and Phil.
Every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m.
That's right. Tune in and you'll hear thought-provoking conversations and maybe something that'll make you mad.
Yeah, thought-provoking if they're listening to me. They'll get mad if they're listening to you.
Just the same, we'll see you Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
4 to 5 p.m.
The Real Deal with George and Phil.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At Connect Care, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At Connect Care, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At Connect Care, we still provide urgent care. And at Connect Care, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at Connect Care, but we're still connected to you. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
Good Turn for America. Be a hero in your community. No experience necessary.
team up with volunteers from the Boy Scouts and Habitat for Humanity to build homes for deserving families. Log on to goodturnforamerica.org to make a difference.
Hey everybody, I'm Scott Cooper. I want to invite you to tune in to my show, Floral Design Inside and Out, every Tuesday at 10 a.m. right here on WGNU. Join me as I take you on a journey inside the incredible world of flowers. I'll entice you with ideas from weddings to home entertaining and so very much more. I'm all about flowers and a whole lot of fun. Please join me Tuesdays at 10 a.m. as we stop and smell the flowers right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Now we take you back to the best of the wake-up call on AM 920 WGNU.
Whoa, oh, mercy, mercy me. Oh, things ain't what they used. Where did all the blue skies go? Poison is the wind that blows.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back. Welcome back. I am talking to Professor Deborah Gerner, Professor of Political Science, University of Kansas, joining us from Lawrence, Kansas, and we're talking about the Middle East without Arafat. Professor, welcome back. I want to take a couple of calls here.
Sounds good.
Welcome to Mondays at 9. Do you have a question or comment for our guest, Dee?
Yes, I have a question. Look, Arafat, from my understanding, was married twice. His first wife was a black woman. I wanted to find out some insight about her. Could you elaborate if you know anything about that?
Thanks for your call and question.
I have never heard that he was married on two occasions, and so I'm afraid I can't help you out on that one. All I have ever heard was that he married late in life the woman that he married, who was Arab.
And how old is his daughter now?
About eight.
About eight? Welcome to Mondays at 9. You have a question or comment for our guest?
Yes, I'd like to know how much does the Bush agenda have to deal with the Israeli agenda in building this wall and containing these people and keeping them from important things that they need to have and to make their lives better? Because it seems like to me the quality of life in the Middle East is like controlling these people, and it has something to do with that. And what keeps coming to my mind is the New World Order that George W. Bush's father always wanted to try to push to people.
Thank you. Is there something different about this administration? Because there's a history in the United States of administrations embracing the Israeli policy. Is there something different about this administration?
I think there are a couple of things that are different about this administration, and you're right that the United States has consistently supported Israel to a greater or lesser extent, depending on the president. What's different about George W. Bush is, first, that he has very clearly stated that as an evangelical Christian, that he believes that Israel has a biblical reason for its existence. So that's something quite different. He also refused to deal with Arafat, and that was of critical importance because, after all, Arafat was elected in a election which was verified by Israel and the United States in 1996, and that the United States declared as being free, fair, open, etc. And so he violated what has always been a U.S. policy, which is that you have to talk to your opponents. Even during the height of the Cold War against the Soviet Union, the United States continued to talk to the leaders of what was then the Soviet Union. But this administration has taken a very different stand and has really told Israel it can do virtually anything that it wants to.
And did this administration receive any repercussions for having such a reversal of policy?
This administration is so disliked by most of the rest of the international community that this change in policy is just one additional little piece in why so much of the world dislikes the United States policy right now.
So there were no repercussions?
Well, not that I was aware of, not that were any different than the more general repercussions against U.S. policy toward Iraq, U.S. policy toward Afghanistan, U.S. policy toward Al-Qaeda, U.S. policy on a whole variety of issues where the current administration has moved away from the multilateralism which has characterized U.S. policy in the past and is really out doing its own thing.
Now, we have a few more callers on the line, but I want to get to this really quickly. In terms of this, the president-elect of occupied Palestine, where do we stand in terms of having the rest of the Palestinian people, or having Palestinian people embrace him and embrace what he stands for? Is that going to happen?
I certainly hope that it does, if only because the Palestinian community needs to have a leader that they can be behind. That's the only way that we're going to make any progress. And I know you've got somebody waiting, but I need to quickly read one of the principles that was behind a book that I just finished earlier this year writing with 14 other people called When the Rain Returns, Toward Justice and Reconciliation in Palestine and Israel. And one of our principles is that only mutual respect can lead to long-term security. No human community can for long assure its own security by imposing a state of insecurity on its neighbors. And I think that is something that both Palestinians and Israelis are going to have to come to terms with.
You have a question or comment for our guest?
I have a question for you, guest. I'd like to know, has she ever sat down and drew parallels between how Israel treats the Palestinians and apartheid as well as Jim Crowism?
That's a great question. I've not done that systematically, although I've certainly done it informally. But one of
the parallels are inescapable, aren't they?
They are inescapable. And one of the people that I traveled with 2 years ago in not just Palestine and Israel, but also throughout the region, Jordan, Egypt, Syria, Lebanon, was a black woman from South Africa, and the most poignant thing that she said, she was very soft-spoken, but she said, what I am observing is worse than anything I lived under apartheid.
And in terms of the practices that we see that have been used against the Palestinians, it's straight out of Jim Crow.
Much of it is out of Jim Crow, and I would also make the other comparison, which is that much of what the United States is now doing in the way it's addressing Iraq seems to follow what Israel does in its treatment of Palestinians. So there's a back-and-forthness to the whole thing, which is quite striking.
And, Professor, if you could make a recommendation to people who want to find out, who want to learn more and want to be more knowledgeable about what is happening to the Palestinian people, what's happening in Israel and what's happening in Palestine, where would you direct them?
Oh, I think there are a bazillion sources, but I would direct them not for self-interested reasons, because I will make no money, but I would direct them to this book, When the Rain Returns, which they can obtain from the American Friends Service Committee. It's only $15, and the reason I recommend it is that it has in the back huge appendices of various other groups who are working on this issue. And so there's web-based resources, there's a long bibliography, and from there they can go almost anywhere.
My favorite part of a book, the bibliography.
Exactly. It's When the Rain Returns.
And Professor Deborah Gerner, thank you so much for joining us on Mondays at 9.
It's a great pleasure to talk with you, Liz.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Listen, folks, Liz Brown, Wake Up Call. I'll be back same time, same place tomorrow. Stay strong.
You're listening to the best of the Wake Up Call right here on 920 WGN. Stick around for the news, traffic, and weather. That's up next, followed by more of the best of the Wake Up Call.
Please do not beg for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below that the low knee.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Feel me, brothers.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
That all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. When you compare it to past presidential funerals, it may be low-key, but those close to Gerald Ford say that's the way the nation's 38th president would have wanted to be remembered. No caisson, no horse-drawn carriage. The bell will toll 38 times at National Cathedral. ABC's Ann Compton has more on who will provide the tributes at today's service.
President Ford personally chose the speakers for his funeral. The president, of course, and his friend, the first President Bush, but also Henry Kissinger, who was Ford's Secretary of State at the end of the Vietnam War, and former network anchorman Tom Brokaw, who was a reporter assigned to cover the Ford years in the White House.
Later today, Mr. Ford will make his last trip home to Grand Rapids, Michigan, where he will be buried tomorrow.
This city clearly feels a huge sense of pride about its favorite son, Gerald Ford. Signs at a makeshift memorial say, "A nation restored with Ford." And you were a Ford in the party of Lincoln, but a Cadillac among presidents.
ABC's Pam Coulter in Grand Rapids. A U.S. soldier killed by a roadside bomb near Baghdad is the first military casualty in Iraq of the new year. Three other soldiers were wounded in the incident. 1 year ago today, an explosion at the Sago coal mine in West Virginia killed 12 men by year's end. 35 miners died on the job. More from ABC's Luis Giovanni.
Coal mine production from January through September hit a nine-month record, 871 million tons. And USA Today reports for the year the deaths of men mining coal, 47, hit a record too. It's been 10 years since coal mining exacted such a toll. Behind the number, two big disasters at the Sago mine in West Virginia and in a Kentucky mine.
There are new regulations on the state and federal level, but most haven't taken effect yet. Still shoveling parts of the plains trying to dig out after last week's mega winter storm. The highways have reopened. Trucks carrying food for people and livestock are getting in. This is ABC News.
Feels like I get this same cold every year. So I got the same nighttime medicine I always get. But I was congested all night, so it wasn't the same.
Many cold medicines have changed. NyQuil Cold Flu Relief no longer has a decongestant. New Tylenol Cold Nighttime does. It helps relieve more of your worst cold symptoms, and it helps you sleep. It's one more step towards a pain-free world. Stop. Think. New Tylenol Cold. Take only as directed.
My husband had a health concern a month ago.
Mr. Thompson, everything looks good.
Oh, thanks, doctor.
It turned out to be nothing, but it got us doing more for our health.
And stretch and bend.
Like morning exercise and taking silver.
Centrum Silver Multivitamin is age-adjusted. It helps protect your health as you age with key antioxidants that help support natural cell repair. Centrum Silver Multivitamin.
Things have sure changed around here.
Our health protection starts with silver.
Take along with a healthy diet and exercise.
Here's another reason to talk to your daughter if she reads magazine articles about weight loss could make a real difference in her health in years to come.
Hit your dream weight now. Count calories to stay fit. New body, new you. Those are just a few of the articles in recent issues of fashion magazines. And new research from the University of Minnesota has found that girls in middle school who read them are twice as likely later to try things like fasting to lose weight. Those young girls were three times as likely to try vomiting or taking laxatives. The study, which appears in the journal Pediatrics, is suggesting perhaps those types of magazines shouldn't be in the waiting rooms of doctors' offices. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
Well, first he scored the two-point conversion that gave Boise State a 43-42 win over Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl. But Ian Johnson had more on his mind. He wanted to ask his girlfriend, cheerleader Christy Papadix, to marry him. Her answer?
Yes!
Good for them. Congratulations. Daria Olvinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Bryant-Meyer with your WGNU News Update for the 7 o'clock hour. In the news this Tuesday, an argument may have led to a fatal shooting in Cahokia. Early yesterday morning, a 29-year-old man was shot and he died later at an area hospital. Detectives aren't saying the victim was murdered, but they are questioning a person of interest concerning the shooting. Police also say the man they are holding may have been arguing with the victim before he was shot. The victim's name hasn't been released. Area power bills may be on the rise. Ameren wants another $361 million a year from customers, saying that residential rates would go up 10% or about $6 a month per customer. However, the top lawyer for the Missouri Public Service Commission says that the company should actually be cutting its rates. Two huge storms within 6 months have damaged Ameren UE's relationship with its area customers, leaving some residents without power for more than a week in each case. Police in Northwoods are investigating a fire at a playground. Someone allegedly set fire to the safety foam padding on a playground in Northwoods City Park, destroying several $1,000s worth of equipment. Northwoods Mayor Everett Thomas says the fire chief told him it appeared to be arson and not an accident. The mayor says that surveillance cameras in the park will hopefully lead them to the culprits. Finally this hour, the Rams won't be heading to the playoffs this year. However, they did end the season on a winning note with a convincing 41-21 win over the Minnesota Vikings at the Metrodome on Sunday. The team was officially eliminated from postseason contention when the New York Giants defeated Washington on Saturday night. Head coach Scott Linehan said that the goal of the game was to become an 8-8 football team and improve. That's your look at local news for the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Bryant-Meyer for Radio Free St. Louis.
Let's take a look at your traffic and your weather. Here's your traffic. Eastbound 40 between Boone's Crossing and Chesterfield Parkway. Look for some delays due to an accident. The vehicle's off the roadway. Northbound 55 between Butler Hill and 255 looks good. Westbound 270 from 367 through West Florissant is on the move as well. Westbound 5570 from 3rd Street on the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for no delays. Eastbound 70 from Bryan Road through 79. Look for delays. Eastbound 40 from Spady through McKnight and then again from Highway 141 back through Mason. Look for no delays. Northbound 55 from Arsenal through 44. You can expect some delays there. Traffic is building on southbound 170 from Club Tower through Eager as there's a police activity, a medical emergency that's at Brentwood and Eager Roads. And northbound 270 from Dorset through 70, look for slow traffic in the right lanes as you exit onto 70. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic hasn't been sponsored by anybody. Let's take a look at this hour's WGNU weather for today, tomorrow, and for Thursday. Mostly sunny day with a high in the lower 50s this evening. Mostly clear with a low in the lower 30s. For Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high in the upper 50s is what is expected. On Thursday, partly sunny skies in the morning, mostly cloudy throughout the day with a high in the mid-50s as well. Currently, we are sitting at 27 degrees under mostly clear skies. Lambert Fields reporting some scattered clouds and 28 degrees. Liz Brown is not here today. Instead, we have the best of the wake-up call. It's on the way. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, talk to me, sister. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, talk to me, sister.
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg folks for power. Nobody
was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that the blow that the blow made.
I think I'm hearing revolution.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal.
The best new wake-up call on AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air, from the brothers. Talk to the
sun. It is time for us to use our power. For power, nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
Say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that the blow that the blow made.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air from the brothers.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
That all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equality.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back to the wake-up call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. And if you want to toll-free long-distance me, you can do that at 1-877-920-WGNU. And also, do not forget, or always remember, that we are broadcasting live on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net from Xenia to Zimbabwe. You can catch us here on the Wake Up Call. You can always do it at lizbrown.com, too. That's L-I-Z-Z, two Z's in my name, lizzbrown.com. We have much, much, much to talk about, folks. You need to really get to us. This hour, we're going to be talking about something that may be coming your way. It's interesting to consider the day after the unashamed orgy that occurred yesterday, the day after. And unlike other orgies that I've been told, the folks that woke up this morning after the $40 million orgy in Washington, D.C., they don't wake up with any regrets about where their money went and what they did the night before. And it's interesting to think about how that $40 million could have touched the lives of millions of children. That were suffering, 22 million children to be exact, that suffered from the results of the tsunami. Because that's the number of children that would have received vaccinations and preventive health care with that $40 million that went to the orgy yesterday. And that's just children that are over there. And if we have no concern for children over there, I guess it should come as no surprise that we're fixing to do things that demonstrate that we don't have any concern for children over here. This morning I am going to be talking to Greg Haefeli, the Deputy Director of Government Relations for the Children's Defense Fund, joining us from Washington, D.C., to talk about a Tennessee proposal, TennCare, that is going to have a huge impact on a decision of overhauling the TennCare program that's going to have an enormous impact on about 600,000 children in Tennessee and what that means for the rest of us. Greg, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. Greg, talk to us about what's getting ready to happen in Tennessee to the low-income children in Tennessee.
Well, just to lay a little bit of groundwork, there's a very important program for children across the country, low-income children in particular, called the Medicaid program. And that's a program that currently serves about 25 million low-income children who are mostly uninsured throughout the country. TennCare is Tennessee's version of the Medicaid program. And what they're doing in Tennessee is they are going to, first of all, throw about 300,000 adults off the Medicaid program. These are adults that, you know, rely on the program for their health insurance as well. And at the same time, they are going to radically change the benefits or the services that children receive through the TennCare program. And when I say radically change it, basically Medicaid is a really fantastic program for children's health benefits because it covers prevention, you know, immunizations, you know, regular childhood screenings for problems such as vision problems, hearing problems, a screening test that's really important for low-income children to determine whether they've been exposed to lead poisoning, which is a huge problem, particularly with older housing stock in our country where, you know, low-income people's children are being exposed to, you know, flaking lead paint in substandard housing. In addition to those preventive services, Medicaid offers a very comprehensive package of services once a child's health problems are diagnosed. The bottom line is the federal government says that every child covered by the Medicaid program is supposed to get whatever treatment is necessary to treat any medical condition that they have. What Tennessee is going to do is say, we're not going to listen to the child's doctor about what they need. We're going to let state bureaucrats make the decision over whether a service is needed or not, and make a decision about whether they want to make a different service available that might be cheaper than what the doctor says the child needs. And so this is a radical undermining of the Children's Benefit Package Medicaid program.
Now, when you say that state bureaucrats would now be making these decisions, what decisions or what state bureaucrats are we talking about?
These would be the people that work for the state running the 10-CARE program.
We're not talking about a state-employed doctor or a state-employed nurse or a state-employed medical expert of any sort. This is just a regular state bureaucrat?
They may involve doctors or nurses in part of the decision-making process, but what they're doing in Tennessee is sort of indicative of what's been happening in managed care all around the country, where the judgment of the doctor treating the patient is being second-guessed, sometimes services denied, sometimes different services offered than what the treating physician says is best for the patient. So this is a real radical intrusion into the doctor-patient relationship.
And it impacts upon children.
That's correct.
Now, how are they, how would this is a federally funded program. How can the state of Tennessee make these changes?
Well, actually, Medicaid is a program where the federal government kicks in a huge chunk of the funding.
Overwhelming most of the funding.
Right. But there is a state match that's required that varies from state to state.
And no doubt that Tennessee's match is lower than California's match.
Correct. Absolutely right. Because of that state match, what Tennessee's doing is they're saying, look, we're having tight budget problems. We're going to cut back on how much we're kicking into the Medicaid program by, you know, taking away some of these services.
But they're not paying that much of the services.
That's kind of shocking that they would go this far, knowing that, you know, for every, you know, dollar that they give up of or pull back of state funding, they're going to lose, you know, like $6 or $7 of federal funding for those services as well. But they're really looking at their state budget bottom line, unfortunately.
Well, they're going to the place that's easiest to, I mean, where far too many states go to start getting money are the people that I have the fewest means to, or the least means to fight back.
That's absolutely right.
And
this is actually the beginning of what's going to be a very difficult year here in Washington, because we're expecting President Bush to propose a budget that is going to severely cut the Medicaid program while at the same time pushing to make the tax cuts that they've given to the wealthy permanent.
Well, actually, during the hearings of Mike, I believe it's Leavitt, who is Bush's nominee to head the Department of Health and Human Services, when he was asked that question directly of whether or not there would be cuts in Medicaid, he wouldn't rule it out.
That's right.
He didn't rule it out.
That's right. And we fully expect that there are going to be massive cuts in that budget when it's announced in a couple of weeks.
So in terms of how these, whether or not these cuts will take place in Tennessee, there still has to be some kind of legal process that is gone through before Tennessee can do this. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. You've done your homework on this. There have been a number of lawsuits in Tennessee on behalf of low-income children, saying that the state wasn't complying with the federal benefits requirements for children under the Medicaid program, and they actually have some court orders agreeing with them, saying that the state needs to do a better job of delivering exactly what it's supposed to. So with this proposal that Tennessee is pushing forward with now, they're going to have to get court approval because of the court orders that are currently in place. But that's just the first step. The second step is they're going to have to get permission from the Department of Health and Human Services here in Washington, D.C., to do this as well.
Now, the cynical part of me believes or predicts that the state of Tennessee may be coming up with this way of reducing this money to in this manner in order to offer it as an option to the federal government. And given what Leavitt has already said, he'll agree to it, and this will open up the floodgates for all states across the union to do this.
Absolutely right. Governors, when they hear about other states getting what are called waivers in the Medicaid program from the federal government, of the rules that we work really hard to put in place to protect beneficiaries, when governors hear that waivers are granted, other governors just line up outside the HHS door asking for waivers for their states too. And so this has the potential of really severe consequences for 25 million children across the country. And I can tell you in Missouri, where your program is based, it has the potential of affecting more than 500,000 children in the state of Missouri who are enrolled in Medicaid.
Now, this could happen regardless of what happens in the courts. Tennessee can always go to the federal government and ask for a waiver.
Right. That's right.
So the federal courts could order to the state of Tennessee to do better. They could say yes, and then they could go to the federal government and ask for a waiver and do it exactly what they want to do.
That's right. And let me just tell you, there have been other recent developments on waivers in a couple of other places. President Bush's brother, Governor Jeb Bush, has recently unveiled a proposal where they would accept a cap of federal funding for the Medicaid program, and in exchange for that, want permission to be able to put people in whatever health insurance that private companies want to offer without any benefit requirements, without any protections for low-income people, for cost-sharing limits. And that's a very disturbing development because, the whole idea, of this administration has been privatize, the private sector knows best. But what they ignore and, was pointed out during the hearings on the nomination of Mr. Leavitt to be Secretary of HHS, Medicaid and Medicare are extraordinarily efficiently run programs with very low administrative overhead, while at the same time serving very vulnerable populations in our country.
So Jeb Bush is creating just an extraordinary opportunity for insurance companies to have people forced into their companies.
Yes. And it's a particularly sweet deal for the insurance companies because the whole notion of insurance is risk. You and I buy insurance, whether it's health insurance or car insurance or homeowners insurance, because there's a risk. We could have a loss. We could have an illness. We could have an accident. The insurance company assumes risk in exchange for us paying a premium. And what Governor Bush is proposing in Florida is a very limited risk exposure for the insurance companies and giving the Medicaid enrollees a heightened exposure to financial disaster, because that's where the losses will end up.
And this has happened in Florida? Or?
It's just been proposed, and we expect it to be, the subject of a lot of discussion here in Washington and among other governors as they, look to try to copy it if, it ends up being approved by Washington, D.C.
Now, aren't there governors out there that care about whether or not the poorest of the poor children receive the health care protection that they should? I mean, a governor doesn't have to line up at the door to have a waiver.
That's right, and as in any other areas of life, there are some that are better than others. The one thing that's kind of unique, though, about governors and their perspective is they look at the Medicaid budget with a lot of anxiety because it represents usually the second or the third largest budget item in their state after education, prisons, and sometimes highways. And, you know, they have a frustration with the growth in healthcare costs, just like, you know, is happening in the private sector. I mean, you know, employers are seeing their insurance premiums skyrocket. And the trend is that more and more employees are absorbing huge portions of their health insurance costs that used to be, you know, much more heavily financed by employers. So, you know, what's happening with the governors is they're looking for ways to ratchet down on those Medicaid costs because, you know, the bottom line is a lot of times they'd like to spend a lot more money on things like education or on highway construction or other things. And unfortunately, poor people are usually the weakest or the most vulnerable, as you said earlier, you know, in the political equation of, you know, how those monies are allocated. And so they're at risk in this scenario because of, you know, how our governors are looking at Medicaid as part of their overall budgets.
Let me take a quick question here. You have a question for our guest? Listen, we're going to take a break. I'm here talking to Greg Haefele, the director, deputy director of government relations for the Children's Defense Fund, joining us from Washington, D.C. I'm Liz Brown. This is The Wake Up Call. We'll be back. Stay with us.
And you've been listening to the best of The Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Surprise, surprise for you. Stick around. Irene J. Smith will be filling in for Liz Brown after this break. Good morning, St. Louis. Let's take a look at your traffic and your weather. Northbound 270 from 44 through Big Bend. Look for some delays. Westbound 270 from Old Hall Ferry through West Forest. And traffic will return back to normal. Eastbound 44 from Lewis through Antire. Look for a disabled vehicle on the ramp to Antire, so it's causing a little bit of problems down there. Eastbound 70 from Highway K through 79. Look for some slowdowns there. Eastbound 40 from Spade through McKnight. You can expect a few delays there. Northbound 55 at Butler Hill and 255 is on the move. And westbound 5570 from 3rd Street and into the Poplar Street Bridge. That's where you get the major slowdown is going to be. That is a look at this hour's traffic. Now let's take a look at this hour's weather. Today, mostly sunny with a high in the lower 50s. This evening, mostly clear with a low in the lower 30s. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high in the upper 50s. And Thursday, partly sunny in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy throughout the day with a high around 50 or so. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 29 degrees and some scattered clouds, although if you look outside, you can't see it. Lambert Field is reporting 29 degrees as well. Stay tuned now. Liz Brown is off today. However, we have Irene J. Smith filling in for her. That's up next following these messages. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
If you have suffered roof damage from the recent severe weather, Phil Person Roofing is still a name you can trust. Licensed and certified for commercial and residential jobs. Phil Person Roofing offers free estimates for all work. To contact Person Roofing, call this special emergency number, 602-1047. That's 602-1047. Phil Person Roofing, 602-1047.
I want you to want.
They never played by the rules, and now they're playing the family arena. Cheap Trick. Saturday, January 27th. Cheap Trick will rock the family arena in St. Charles.
Mommy's all right, Daddy's all right. They just seem a little weird. Surrender.
Along with Soul Asylum.
Waiting by the phone. Waiting for you to call me up and tell me.
Tickets for Cheap Trick and Soul Asylum are on sale now at all MetroTix locations, the Family Arena Ticket Office, and online at MetroTix.com. Tickets start at just $15. Cheap Trick. With Soul Asylum. Cheap Trick. With Soul Asylum. Saturday, January 27th at the Family Arena in St. Charles.
This is Lloyd Sloan, the Sloan Ranger, defending truth, fighting bad guys, and sometimes wearing a mask. A little history, a little entertainment, current events, a lot of good fun, and healthy debate. Call me, argue. If you're wrong, I will disarm you. But have no fear. The Sloan Ranger never shoots to kill. That's weekdays 5 to 6 on WGNU.
This is the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
How do I say goodbye to what we had? The good time that made us laugh, I'll wave them back. I thought we'd get to thee forever, but forever's gone now.
Oh yes, hard to say goodbye to yesterday. Probably for those of us who are over probably 35 or 36, maybe 40, we remember that song. Cooley High, I believe, if I'm right on that. Happy New Year. Oh, it's January the 2nd, and I just want to try to make sure that you have marked your calendar for this evening. There's going to be a public hearing at Wove Community Center at King's Highway and Martin Luther King, dealing with a request by Amron UE to receive a increase. You see that we need to remember yesterday, like when you didn't have any flowers because you couldn't keep them warm. You have got to get to that meeting tonight at Wolves Community Center at 6. There's also an emergency school board meeting, is my understanding, at 5:30. If necessary, we need to split time, get to both meetings. But the Amron meeting certainly is very important, as well as the school board meeting. Well, we're in 2007. This is the year that there are going to be a lot of changes in our city, in our country, in the world, in our lives. But that change, a lot of that change is up to us. What are we going to do? Throughout the last several days in our community, there have been a rash of killings of men, women, children have been killed. Some have been killed by each other. Some, according to some sources, have been killed by the police unjustifiably. We have a crime problem in the city of St. Louis. But more importantly, we have a benign neglect problem in certain sections of our city. I dare to say that if the crime situation were the way it is today in our community, and Ron Henderson was still the chief of police, we would hear an outcry from throughout this city for his head. Yet, we have Joe Mokwa as our chief of police, And we have barely heard any criticism of what are you going to do to address the crime problem in our city. Now, there has been much to do about a poll or a rating of making our city the number one most dangerous city. And I certainly understand the challenges to the manner in which that determination came about. But whether we are number one or number 20, crime in our community is out of control. And I'm not just simply talking about the murders either. Burglaries, robberies, rapes. That is, now that they are actually taking the reports and doing the reports on rapes. Because as you may recall, we had incidents in which the police department was not reporting rapes as rapes. In fact, they were not doing police reports on them. They were doing what they called memorandums to avoid those crimes being counted as crime statistics in the city of St. Louis. So, community, we have at our feet a great challenge. We look at what is happening throughout the city and particularly in North St. Louis relative to crime. And many elders that I speak with on a daily basis and many young people say, well, where are the police? I don't see them patrolling. Where are they? Yet as a caravan of us drove through downtown St. Louis after the blanket drive, seeking out and looking for the homeless, there was a great deal of police presence along Washington Avenue, considered quite often as the now nightlife of the city. Then you talk to some police officers and they say, well, if you want greater protection, you should do as other communities have done. You should pass a community tax where you can hire your own private security. Quite interesting when you take into consideration the fact that more than a third of our general revenue goes to the police department. And when you take into effect that St. Louis, unlike countless other governmental entities throughout this state, does not control its police department. So we asked ourselves, is there any relationship between the way that policing takes place in our community and the fact that we do not have local control of our police department, despite the fact that we pay the bill to the tune of more than a third of our general revenue for one department. Yet we do not have the ability to reorganize, to restructure our police department in a way that addresses the crime that is devastating our community. And I submit to you that the administration, of which our mayor is a member of the Board of Police Commissioners, is not putting pressure on or coming up with a plan to address the crime that is devastating our community. Yet we pay the bill. The Board of Police Commissioners will summons meetings with our state reps to decide on what their agenda is for our community without even conferring with our local elected officials, that is, members of the St. Louis Board of Aldermen. Yet we, citizens of this city, pay the bill. This is the Morning Wake-Up Call. This is the Liz Brown Show. This is yours truly, Irene J. Smith, sitting in for Liz, who is off today. We'll be back with you after the break. Stay tuned.
Davis, home mortgage consultant with Wells Fargo.
And I'm Jacques Land with the 100 Black Men of Metropolitan St. Louis.
And we're the hosts of Let's Get Wealthy, investing in more ways than one. We'll discuss home ownership as a means to build wealth, create positive personal finances, stabilize our neighborhoods, and acquire the American dream.
Tune into our show, Let's Get Wealthy, every Wednesday at 11 a.m. to get some food for thought during your lunch hour. Sponsored by the 100 Black Men of Metropolitan St. Louis, Wells Fargo Housing Foundation, and produced by the Platinum Group.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At Connect Care, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At Connect Care, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At Connect Care, we still provide urgent care. And at Connect Care, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at Connect Care, but we're still connected to you. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
Hey everybody, I'm Scott Cooper. I want to invite you to tune in to my show, Floral Design Inside and Out, every Tuesday at 10 a.m. right here on WGNU. Join me as I take you on a journey inside the incredible world of flowers. I'll entice you with ideas from weddings to home entertaining and so very much more. I'm all about flowers and a whole lot of fun. Please join me Tuesdays at 10 a.m. as we stop and smell the flowers right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Informative. Educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Hopefully there for us. So where are we going to be for our children to provide them with a safe, nurturing environment? And whose fault is it that our community is suffering from this siege of crime? Although there certainly has to be some responsibility in terms of policing, but the total responsibility does not lie with the police department. We, too, community, have responsibility. Now, the police department and the circuit attorney's office would have you believe that it all the blame lays at the feet of the courts. Then others would have you believe that all of the blame lays at the feet of parents who are not raising their children properly. But I submit to you that it is a mixture of all of that. But certainly when criminal elements know that they can get away with committing crimes in particular communities, they're going to be more inclined to commit those crimes in the community. So this is Irene J. Smith sitting in for Liz Brown, who is not here today. This is the Morning Wake-Up Call. Our contact numbers are 454-0400, long distance 1-877-920-WGNU, or you can log in on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. So where are we, community? One of the things that we must do this evening at 6 o'clock is to show up at Wolves Community Center to address the Public Service Commission about Ameren's request for a rate increase. News reports have indicated that Ameren, in fact, has made more money than the Public Service Commission says that they should have made. There's also my understanding there's an emergency school board meeting at 5:30. I will get the location as quickly as I can for you. We have issues there as well. We have issues at the beginning of 2007 that will determine the future of our community. Which way, community? Which way? What do we do? How can we, as individuals, improve the quality of life in our community? What is it that we must demand of our city government, of the police, of the court systems? What is it? What can we do? I'm going to go to the phone lines. Good morning.
Good morning, Miss Irene. Happy New Year's to you and your family.
Thank you very much. The same to
you. Everybody, and thank you for addressing our community problem, because we do have a problem which is out of control. Our Alderman Troop, he's trying to help us. And our block over here, our last letter we wrote to the congressman. Please, you got to come down here and help us with this crime problem. We sent letters to the mayor, to the chief. We don't know what else to do. We've been trying to get graffiti off of King's Heights on this wall for a year. Can't get that off.
And that's a service that the city of St. Louis provides that is not happening. So that needs to be addressed. You know, I was looking as I read about different things that are happening in different parts of the country. And right now, the exact city that this happened in escapes me. But when the city was faced with the type of crime issues that we are facing today, the mayor established and the police chief established a state of emergency. I don't see that urgency in our city at all. I don't see a plan being rolled out. We've heard general statements that we're going to have a plan. We're going to restructure. We're going to, I guess, reassign some police officers. But if you're merely reassigning police officers and not giving them an action plan to deal with the problems that are impacting our community in terms of police responding to situations. Ms. West, I submit to you that many of the reasons that people are moving out of our community is because of murders, because for the most part, those are acts between individuals that know each other. And that certainly is a crime that impacts our community. But many people are leaving because they cannot keep their car in front of their house. They cannot keep their lawn equipment. And people are breaking in and stealing. And then they cannot even get the police to come out to make a report. They ask what the value is, and then they give you a complaint number, a police number for your insurance company. If you can afford to have insurance and your insurance have not been canceled because of the number of claims that you have submitted.
That is true, because my insurance company was telling me because it's so high, it's because of where you live. And that's horrible.
So where is...
Go back, like you said, the lawnmower's stolen out of my garage right here.
So where is the state of emergency? Where is our local elected officials, our state elected officials, our federal elected officials? Where are the courts and the police department? Where is the coming together to come up with, and the community coming together to address this issue? I don't see it.
I don't see it.
I see the efforts of our aldermen and writing letters and challenging people and raising issues. I see the efforts of others in our community raising issues. But I don't see the joint, united front in addressing a serious issue that is impacting our community and causing people to move out of our communities, out of their beautiful triple brick structures.
Beautiful, beautiful. And some have been here for years and they hate to leave, but they can't stay. They can't take it any longer. And also, as you said, we have to address our own personal responsibility.
Of course.
I pay some men to clean up in the back of my alley last week. Before we could go, we woke up the next morning. And it's worse.
Yes.
I don't know what
we have. We have personal responsibilities. You know, when trash is there and we do not, and it is not picked up. Say, for an example, we have been reporting a particular trash issue that is not in the alley, not anybody's responsibility, at a vacant piece of property for almost 6 months now. When that trash is not moved, then people who are looking to dump believe that that's a sufficient place to dump. When we do not have patrolling, driving down the alleys, driving down the street, then people feel free to do things. They don't think the police, we've had one individual, one of my godchildren, they have had three vehicles in their family stolen. And Leslie Farr, who does not live far from them, his vehicle was stolen. And guess what? The cars were basically all at the same location, which leads me to believe that there are individuals affiliated with this particular house that are stealing cars. So then what's the plan to prevent them from doing that and to hold them accountable for that? That is a police responsibility.
Because if we see it, we know the police. I was telling our captain, I think a lot of this is racism. It, when I go across Del Mar, everything starts changing. I believe that part of this is strictly old racism. Let us go down. Because we need some help.
You know, we don't see a state of emergency. As downtown St. Louis is repopulated, we are not experiencing that in various areas of our community that is happening. But I don't see any emphasis from the administration.
No, because I went to Mayor Slate. I said, wait, you want downtown? And St. Louis is a great city. How can it be a great city if my neighborhood is going down? You must address this problem in my neighborhood.
Oh, very definitely.
You take care.
Miss West, I hope to see you this evening.
I'm calling Amber Uri. We used to call. I got my telephone pole numbers.
Okay, get the people out. We got to pack that meeting out.
Let your voices be heard. Everybody to get up there at 6 o'clock, and the rest of you special parents, get down there to that school.
It's at 801.
Okay.
801 North 11.
Black men, you have to help us. Help the women and the children. The black men, you are not doing the things that you should do. That's my plea. Black men, please help us. Help us. You can do it. And you know what's going on.
All right. Thank you, Ms. West. You have a good day. I'll see you this evening. That is at the Wolves Community Center at King's Highway and Martin Luther King this evening at 6 p.m. The Public Service Commission will be in town to hear, to hold a public hearing on whether or not Ameren UE should have a rate increase. This is your opportunity to address the commission about the quality of the services that we feel we are receiving from Ameren. I know you, it's been a little while. I know you done had a good Christmas. I know you done ate a lot. I know you went out partying New Year's Eve, but certainly you remember being without power. You remember trying to figure out how you were going to keep the elderly warm and how you were going to feed them. You remember also when we were having ice storms when Union Electric was in control and how we didn't suffer. This is the Morning Wake-Up Call, the Liz Brown Show. This is Irene J. Smith sitting in for Liz, who is off today. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news.
The issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. The casket of former President Gerald Ford will soon be on its way to Washington's National Cathedral for the state funeral of the nation's 38th president. ABC's Ann Compton has a preview from Washington.
The cathedral will be filled with thousands of friends and dignitaries and the strains of Gerald Ford's favorite hymns as the nation says farewell to the 38th president. There will be eulogies from two President Bushes, former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, and former network anchorman Tom Brokaw. But Washington is not where President Ford wanted to be buried. His wife and children accompany the casket home to Michigan right after the funeral. Ann Compton, ABC News, Washington.
By most standards, Mr. Ford's funeral will be subdued.
The entire framework for this set of 6 days and the series of remembrances that are going on came from Betty Ford, and she simply said, keep it simple, keep it simple, keep it simple. And that is indeed, certainly reflecting what the former president's wishes were through his wife.
ABC's Charles Gibson in Washington. The former president will be buried tomorrow in his boyhood home of Grand Rapids. 2006 was a deadly year for U.S. troops in Iraq, and now we're being told of the first casualty of 2007.
The new year started with yet another American casualty. We understand that one soldier was killed and three were wounded by a roadside bomb while they were on patrol in a village in southern Baghdad. This comes after 822 American casualties in the year 2006. The future here continues to be one of great violence and carnage.
ABC's Terry McCarthy in Baghdad. Civil airplanes are using heat-seeking equipment today to help spot Colorado livestock that may have been cut off from food by last week's snowstorms. Authorities are also beginning to use Humvees to bring in groceries. This is ABC News.
Today on Judge Kathy, a husband, a wife, and V8 100% vegetable juice.
My husband won't eat right.
Anytime I don't eat enough vegetables, she bops me on the forehead like this. And says, could have had a V8.
It's a love tap.
Oh, it's a bop.
It was a tap. Order in the court.
Don't mess with Judge Kathy.
Sir, have you had any vegetables today?
Yes, I had oysters.
What?
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 Approach the bench.
What will Judge Kathy decide?
Yes, Your Honor. Ow!
You could have had a V8. Get out of my courtroom.
You bopped me, Your Honor.
It was a love tap.
Check your local listings.
Time to get organized. Office Depot has great deals on a wide assortment of file folders, binders, filing cabinets, and shredders. Plus over 800 calendars and planners. So hurry in and get organized today. Office Depot, taking care of business.
Oh, Office Depot.
This week, buy one, get one free on select plastic storage. Offer available in-store only on items of equal or lesser value.
A feud between two New York City shop owners had been simmering for a long time, and it finally boiled over. Really boiled over. Here's ABC's Daniela Bellotta.
The Bronx food fight began when a donut shop started serving up wings, legs, and breasts to compete with the fried chicken restaurant next door. The owner of the chicken place had a hard time swallowing this. Early New Year's morning, he allegedly punched a hole in the wall between the two stores, squirted gasoline into the donut shop, and set it ablaze, nearly burning it to the ground. He was arrested after confessing. Daniela Bellotta, ABC News.
You say you like the Chrysler 300. The carmaker is betting that you'll like its newest set of wheels, a concept car that it's introducing later this week. It's one of the ambitious new models the Big Three will roll out this year, hoping that you'll buy American. Out with the new and in with the old, the NBA is bringing back the leather ball after countless players griped about the microfiber composite model. They said it was just too slippery. I'm Daria Aldinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Bryansmeyer with your WGNU News Update for the 8 o'clock hour. In the news this Tuesday, a tragic car accident claimed the life of a 9-year-old child on New Year's Eve. Taylor Hatcher was riding in a car driven by her cousin, 27-year-old Charmaine Fields. Fields lost control, possibly due to rain-slicked roads, and crashed into a guardrail on the on-ramp to Interstate 170 from I-70. Taylor died later at an area hospital. Funeral arrangements have not yet been finalized. Carbon monoxide detectors are now legally required in Illinois. The law, which went into effect yesterday, states that all homeowners and landlords must have the detectors installed in their homes and apartments. The detectors must be set up within 15 feet of bedrooms. Illinois residents without electric heat rushed to local stores, which are ordering more detectors to keep up with demand. A local man spoke about his experience as the nurse for Saddam Hussein. In an interview with CNN, Master Sergeant Robert Ellis said it was his job to care for Saddam, not to judge him. Ellis was the senior medical advisor at the compound where Saddam was jailed. He said his job was to keep Saddam alive at all costs. Ellis is now home in Normandy and works at the St. Joseph Health Center in St. Charles. Finally this hour, the Blues have signed forward Charles Lindley to an NHL contract. Blues President John Davidson announced the signing yesterday. The 24-year-old played 27 games for the Blues AHL affiliate in Peoria this season and ranked first on the club with 17 goals. Lingley will remain in Peoria with the Rivermen. That's your look at local news for the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Bryantmeyer for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour, 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. Let's take a look at your traffic and your weather. Westbound 44 between Pacific Exit and Franklin St. Louis County Line. Look for road construction that has the right lane closed. You may see some congestion there. Eastbound 70 from K through 79. Look for some delays. Westbound 40 between 270 and Mason. Look for a car fire that's been cleared just east of Mason. There may still be some residual backups as a part of that. Eastbound 40 from Maryville Center all the way into Mason looks good. Westbound 5570 from 3rd Street on the Poplar Street Bridge. Expect some delays. Westbound 270 from Old Halls Ferry through West Florissant. Look for no problems there. Northbound 270 at 44 and Big Bend. Look for some congestion going on there. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. Now let's take a look at this hour's weather. This hour's weather for today. Look forward to mostly sunny, high around 50. For this evening, mostly clear with a low around 30. Wednesday, mostly sunny, expecting highs in the mid-50s, and Thursday, partly sunny early in the morning, mostly cloudy throughout the day with a high in the lower 50s. Currently, the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 31 degrees and mostly clear skies. Lambert Fields reporting 31 as well. Stay tuned now for more of the award-winning wake-up call. Irene J. Smith is filling in for Liz Brown, who is out today. Take another look at your traffic at the bottom of the hour, as well as your weather. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
This bitter earth what fruit it bears, what good is love that no one shares, and if my life
that hides the glow of a rose. What good am I? Heaven only knows. Ooh, this bitter earth.
All right.
Well,
Gladys has gone back to some standards. She's gone back to jazz. This is the Morning Wake Up Call. This is the Liz Brown Show. Liz is off today. This is yours truly, Irene J. Smith, sitting in for Liz. Our contact numbers are 454-0400. You can reach us long distance at 1-877-920-WGNU. Or, hey, if you are at work or just busy or just constantly on your computer, you can log in at the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. I do not know what where the swearing-in ceremony is at City Hall, but I would think that if you would go to the Marshall Station at the front desk facing Tucker, they would be able to direct you. Again, this is January the 2nd, the second day of this new year. This evening, there is much business to tend to for our community. There is a Public Service Commission hearing taking up the issue of whether or not Ameren UE should have a rate increase at Wove Center on Kings Highway at 6 p.m. There is also an emergency school board meeting at 801 North 11th downtown at 5:30. We're going to have to marshal our forces, come out in force at both places. Perhaps we have to split time. We have been talking about our community and particularly the issue of crime in our community. What are we going to do about it? Is the city even really concerned about it, or just issuing statements, making statements? Is the police chief really concerned about crime in our community? You know, my grandmother taught me that if you are concerned, it will be determined by what you do. Not what you say, but what you do. What is being done to address the rash of crime that is hitting our community, devastating areas of our community, particularly in North St. Louis? We don't have control of our police department. We spend over a third of our general revenue on the police department. Yet we have no power to restructure the manner in which they police our communities. We have instances of police running rampant in our community, killing our children. What are we going to do about it? Good morning, Mr. True. Alderman True. Can't tell so many of you.
Like
so many of you troops, I can't figure out which one it is. So this is the Alderman True, who is also a mister.
Yes. I mean, you know, I was listening to Martha and Wes. I guess that saying Martha without saying Martha West is like saying Irene Smith without Irene J. Smith. Because Martha is a hard worker, and she's been out there for years. And Martha made a point, and the point was, you know, where are the black men, and we need their help. But, you know, when I look at what happened to Jeremy, this 15-year-old kid, over there on Greer, it would appear to me that every black male who lives in that weed and seed area over there in the 22nd Ward have a red flag on their head, because the testimony that we was out looking at some and talking to some people to find out exactly who witnessed what really happened to this kid. And this kid was a man on the ground with his hands on all four when they told him to halt, and he stopped and laid on the ground And they shot this kid in the back. Some people say four or five times. Some people say five or six times. And then threw some. The police threw something on the ground, kicked the kid over, and then shot him again. And then the police are saying that that was justifiable homicide. Well, it was homicide, but it wasn't justifiable. That was overt, cold-blooded murder from the information that we are developing from eyewitnesses that saw what happened. They said the kid had his own, when he got out of the truck, he had his hands in the air because, and he slipped when he was going up the hill because he was not orientated well because of, he was on the impact side of the truck when it hit the tree.
Alderman Truth, I want you to hold over. This is the morning wake-up call. This is the Liz Brown Show. Liz is not in today. This is Irene J. Smith sitting in for Liz. Please hang in there. We'll be back after the break.
This is Lloyd Sloan, the Sloan Ranger, defending truth, fighting bad guys, and sometimes wearing a mask. A little history, a little entertainment, current events, a lot of good fun, and healthy debate. Call me, argue. If you're wrong, I will disarm you. But have no fear. The Sloan Ranger never shoots to kill. That's weekdays 5 to 6 on WGNU.
For the past several years, you've heard WGNU's community calendar of events going on in and around the area. Ever wonder where the information comes from? The majority of it comes from our listening audience. If your nonprofit organization would like help promoting its events and ongoing operations free of charge, send all necessary information to calendar@wgnu.net. Please send the correspondence 2 weeks prior to any events. WGNU reserves the right to edit or reject submissions for reasons of time and content.
People can't stop talking about the remarkable results they get with their Bowflex Tread Climber machine.
I lost over 20 pounds working out on the Tread Climber.
I've lost almost 10 inches off my waist.
The Bowflex Tread Climber machine combines the stepping motion of a stepper with the walking motion of a treadmill. It's the low-impact way to burn up to twice the calories of a treadmill at the same speed.
It's really strengthened my core, my abs, and there's no impact on my joints.
Call 1-800-888-7635 for a free information. DVD.
I'm in better shape now than I was 20 years ago.
Get a Bowflex Tread Climber machine for no money down and payments as low as $24 a month.
I'm 40 and I am in the best shape of my adult life.
Be lean, be fit, be Bowflex. For a free DVD, call 1-800-888-7635. 1-800-888-7635.
On approved Bowflex credit card purchases, monthly payment is 1.5% of the purchase plus any late fees. The number of months you pay and total amount of minimum monthly payments depends on additional purchase and account balances. Call for details.
The struggle for fairness on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
This day, you're young. Too soon, you're old. But while a voice within me cries, someone may answer my call.
Gladys is still doing it. Oh, she has a new CD out, y'all, and it is very nice. We're going to continue our discussion with Alderman Troop about the incident that occurred on Friday, wherein by accounts of several eyewitnesses that this Jeremy was murdered by the police. Yes, sir.
Yeah, Irene, you know, as it was indicated earlier, you know, the police department, they gave us the impression, first of all, the word was out that this kid was killed by a black cop and that he had a .45 automatic. Well, that turned out to be totally false because all of the testimony that we received indicated that it was a white cop that killed this kid and that the kid did not have a gun. And what happened was they put a black cop in a white police officer's car that did the shooting and took the black police officer, the white police officer, over in the alley and put him in another car and took him away. So this was all a spin on it to make it appear that this kid was armed and all of that, which was not the case. The only thing that we found out is that this kid had never been arrested. The truck that they had was not stolen. They thought it was. The truck had been rented for the kid to celebrate whoever it was, birthday or something. And it was just so crazy that this kid was killed because it was they did absolutely nothing wrong. But what that shows you, Irene, is that if you create an environment where the children don't have an option, and they have no options at all, that is what created a situation where people can't make choices. Now, the city of St. Louis is responsible for that. The mayor's office, Barbara Geisman, and everybody up there that are not sensitive to giving black kids an option. Just like that taxes we just passed. That don't produce enough money to give the black kids an option and to give programs and supervise, adult supervised activities for these kids in the community. When good kids get killed like this by the police, then there's a problem. The other problem that Martha and you touched on, how can we as citizens who spend $300-400 or maybe $500 million on public safety, fire, police, emergency medical, and whatever else that includes, and we don't control the courts or the police department, how can we control crime? If the governor controls the courts, if the governor appoints the police and the judges and the police commissioners and the legislature controls the police department, just like you indicated, that the chief is meeting with his legislative packet with the black legislators or the city legislators and Jeff City, but he haven't met with the city legislators or the board of aldermen here in the city. I mean, this is insane. This is crazy what's happening to us. But our kids are going to continue to die. And I don't even think that the chief controls the police department, really. I think the St. Louis Police Department is controlled by the Police Officers Association, because there was no investigation of this kid's murder by the police department, from what I can understand and the people that I talk to. Mm. None. Absolutely none.
They took
the police officer's word, and that's what Mook was going on when he's putting his spin out there, what the police officer said, not what any official police investigation has revealed.
That's right. Well, I think it's very often.
I mean, this kid. It's been 5 days.
It is. It's very, very, very disturbing what has transpired. And when you look at situations, similar situations that transpire in other communities throughout this country, and you look at the response of police chiefs in those countries, certainly the idea is to protect the police. I understand the mentality, but you often see police chiefs that say, we are in the process of investigating this. We do not know what transpired. And don't issue a statement until then. You know, the officer is placed on leave. You know, the officer indicates that the kid had a gun, but not taking that as that is what happened without a complete investigation. And it's very interesting to me that the type of investigations that transpire when individuals are more wealthy or in other parts of the city, that type of investigation does not seem to be taking place now. And considering some of the racial statements that the officer who allegedly killed this kid said.
Well, that's unbelievable. Did they put that on air?
He said it was, they indicated that he said over his radio, the N-I-G-G-E-R-S's are coming. Come on down here. And in response, they said it appeared to be the entire 7th District converged on the 5500 block of Greer. Now, if he was in fact talking on his radio, I guess is my understanding that they have tapes of that, then that certainly needs to be part of the investigation.
And that's why we're going to try to get to the Justice Department today before this thing go any further, to see if we can get some intervention there.
To make sure that it is a thorough and complete investigation of what transpired and not a cover-up.
And we're going to try, we also will be trying to get an independent a pathologist today to do the, to sit in on the autopsy or to participate to make sure, you know, what happened to this child, because all of the evidence we indicate, the child was shot in the back on the ground like 5 or 6 times and then was kicked over after something was thrown down on the gun. It rolled him over on it, kicked him over on it, and shot him again in the front of his body. And that is, you can call it justifiable homicide, but that's murder by any other definition of murder.
All right, Alderman Troop, thank you for your input.
Thank you, Aaron.
Good morning, Brother Malik.
How are you doing, sister?
I'm very good now that I hear your voice, because I haven't seen you in a while.
Well, I'm going to bring justice to it. You remember when Carter got killed down here in Carlsbad?
Yes, I remember when Garland Carter got gunned down and the police officer went to his car and attempted to get a throwdown, and the young people said, you're not going to throw down that gun on him. We see he doesn't have a gun.
That's right. Now, Sanchez is out of the district, but he should have never been allowed to walk that street no more. Now, I'm going to bring it down front like it is. When somebody kills your children, they shouldn't be allowed in your neighborhood. You stop waiting on justice from the people who give injustice and start taking it into your own hands, because they're going to kill you anyway. And I'm saying it just like it really is. You mentioned the men in the neighborhood. Where are the men? How come you can't govern your neighborhood? Your life ain't worth a plug nickel if you let it be taken instead of fighting. Remember the old saying that a hero dies but one death and a coward 1,000?
Mm.
Because he has to live every day with his cowardice. I wouldn't let nobody gun my kid down in the neighborhood and not even walk that neighborhood no more.
Mm.
You can forget it. Have a good day, sister.
Thank you, Brother Malik.
All right.
As we were going out and talking with individuals about this incident, where from all indications that we have talked with, sources that we have talked to, this kid was murdered. And it sent chills to me, and I thought about the fact, you know, my daughter will be 24 soon, and I thought about when I was 7 months pregnant and Marilyn Bakes was killed by Joseph Arroyo. And we walked the streets in the heat of July, getting witnesses. And there were individuals who wouldn't talk to the police because they were fearful, because they said the police were threatening. And, you know, we received information of a number of individuals that actually saw the police officer because they just happened to be sitting in a window at a bar. And they saw the police officer throw down a weapon, and what in the street is often called a throwdown. And I thought about how the attempts to cover up the situation with Marilyn Banks. And as we walk through a portion of the former First Ward, talking to individuals and gathering information about what had transpired with this kid, it was so reminiscent of what transpired in 1983 with Marilyn Banks. Despite the fact that we are having issues of crime in our community, we cannot become so despondent that we allow murders to be committed by members of the police force. We must insist that there is a thorough and independent investigation of what transpired in the 5500 block of Greer on Friday around noon or so a day. Because what happens is kids, they have a lot of disrespect for police officers, and I really feel bad for those officers who are good officers. Because I happen to believe that there are policemen who are good police officers. This is Irene J. Smith, sitting in for Liz Brown, who is not in today. Our contact numbers are 454-0400, long distance, 877-920-WGNU, or you're at your computer. You don't want to get away. You don't have to. You can still listen to us at www.wgnu.net. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the break.
Good morning, St. Louis. Let's take a look at your traffic for 8:29 this morning on January the 2nd. Westbound 5570 and the Poplar Street Bridge, you can expect some delays. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois Bank on in, looks like no problems to report there. Northbound 55 is rolling steady into downtown. Northbound 270 is looking good, except for around the 44 interchange. You can expect some delays as there's still some traffic going on there. Eastbound 40 from 270 on in to Clayton. Look for no delays at this hour. There are a number of ongoing construction projects, so just use caution and slow down through those work zones. That is a look at this hour's traffic. Now let's take a look at your weather for today, tomorrow, and for Thursday. Mostly sunny with a high in the lower 50s. This evening, mostly clear. Low in the lower 30s. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high in the upper 50s. And Thursday, partly sunny in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy throughout the day. A high in the mid-50s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we're looking at 31 degrees and clear skies. Lambert Field is also reporting 31 degrees and some scattered clouds. Liz Brown is out today. Instead, we have Irene J. Smith filling in for Liz Brown. So stick around. She's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
Hello, St. Louis. This is George Cotton.
And I'm Phil Wilson.
We're your hosts for The Real Deal with George and Seal.
Every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m.
That's right. Tune in and you'll hear thought-provoking conversations and maybe something that'll make you mad.
Yeah, thought-provoking if they're listening to me. They'll get mad if they're listening to you.
Just the same, we'll see you Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
4 to 5 p.m.
The Real Deal with George and Seal.
This is Decent Guy Don, the original conspiracy hunter. You know, the guy that keeps you up to date on all the good guys and the bad guys out of the Council of Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Illuminati crowd, and assorted other characters who are squeezing the life out of our great American country. Tune in every evening to hear the thunderous crash as I pull the linchpin from the foundations of the House of the New World Order as it crashes down at 7 p.m. Monday through Friday with the conspiracy hunter right here at WGNU 920 a.m.
A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Don't know why. There's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather. Since my man and I ain't together.
All right, that's Gladys. Oh, yeah, she's singing some jazz for you.
We've been talking about conditions in our community, specifically incident over on 5500 block of Greer, where from all indications, a teenager was brutally murdered by a police officer, a St. Louis police officer. Again, this is the Morning Wake-Up Call, the Liz Brown Show. Liz is out today. This is Irene J. Smith sitting in for her. The lines are all lit up. Again, the next call that I'm going to go to, he wants to talk about power. And I don't know whether he's talking about electrical power or people power. But I do want to remind you that tonight at 6 at Wolves at King's Highway and Martin Luther King, there will be a hearing from the Public Service Commission. Emory Uy thinks that they need to have a rate increase. You need to be heard. You need to be there at 6 o'clock. We also have responsibilities relative to the Board of Education. It's my understanding there's an emergency meeting this evening at 5:30 at 801 North 11th. We've got to split our time. We got to marshal our forces. We need to be there. We need to be both places. Let's see what Sam has to say about power. Good morning, Sam.
Irene, when you were speaking about Ameren UE, okay, now, they took over Illinois Power recently, and now Illinois Power was a very good electrical company. They responded rapidly to people's concerns, and they took care of it. And now, like you were saying about your Union Electric that
yes.
you had over here,
yes.
and how good they were compared to what you have now. Okay, well, over in Illinois, they just got a portion of what they wanted, which is to increase the people's bills over there, and they're going to be going up by 300%.
Oh, my.
This is something what was indicated on TV last night. The bad part about this is if you don't have it all at once, they have a payment plan. And so I would like to just reiterate what you're saying to your audience. Go to that meeting, because if that's a done deal, they'll figure out a way, if they can't get it here, to siphon off a dollar here or there, wherever, till they assume that we're going to get some money out of this one way or the other. The only things that I was appalled by during the storms that we had, okay, each and every time they put the vice president out there, just as soon as they got close to completion time on the getting the power restored completely, then they presented you with the president of the corporation. I've seen our United States government at work. I've never seen the vice president address the people in the concerns of state matters or world matters.
The brother had to go out there and earn his keep.
Yeah, I know that, sir. And you know that's why they put him out there. I wanted to ask you something about that young man that was murdered. Okay, you know, we always...
From all accounts, it is, at least the accounts that we were able to talk to, it appears that it was just a cold-blooded murder.
It had to be. And, Irene, you have to think about something. Now, you know how they always throw the standard spin together. The vehicle was stolen. The boy belonged to a gang. The eyewitness accounts are inconsistent. And when it all comes down to a ball, first thing they'll say, the shooting was justified.
They'll say the shooting was justified. That's why we are here on the radio this morning talking about it, you know, and insisting, you know, that something be done about it, that there be a complete, independent, and thorough investigation of this. So just as individuals who commit crimes, because this would be a crime, that just as individuals commit crimes, that they are brought to justice.
I want to mention this, and I'll get off. Down in Louisiana, during the time of the levee breach.
Yes.
Okay, well, they got 7 cops that's going to have to turn themselves in. One young lady that they showed on the world news didn't want her face shown. They were shooting at them up on this bridge. The camera crew was filming everything. The young lady said when she woke up, and show you how bad this was, her arm been severed from her body.
Jesus.
And another young man had been shot 7 times, and they lied just like they lying in this case with this young man. The guy who performed the autopsy said he had 7 bullets in his back. The people, he was running towards his hotel. Now, they claimed that they were supposed to have been shooting at the cops. A lie was told that there was an officer down or in need of assistance. If you get a chance to, and this has something to do with Louisiana, check it up. Check it out on the web, folks. It will boggle your mind because it doesn't make any sense that these are the folks that are that we hired to protect us.
All right, Sam. You have a good day, and remember that hearing tonight at 6 p.m. A.M. has passed. 6 p.m. at Wolves Community Center at King's Highway and Martin Luther King, and also an emergency school board meeting at 801 North 11th this evening. So we got a split time. We're going to go to the phone lines. They're all lit up. Renee.
Yeah, my comment is this.
I can barely hear you, Renee.
Hello?
Yes.
My comment is this. I heard you talked about the state ruling the police department.
The state
had an opportunity to change that with the home rule.
No, that's not true.
But
that's absolutely not true.
The home rule,
that's not. No, it was not included. It was absolutely not included because the home rule did not involve anything relative to the police department. Relative to the police department, hold on, Renee, because you're putting out information that is inaccurate, and I know that it is inaccurate, okay? So in order to change the control of the police department, it takes the amendment of a state statute. And when we were dealing with home rule, we were talking about restructuring the Board of Aldermen, the Comptroller's Office, and giving the mayor greater power. But that power specifically did not involve the Circuit Attorney's Office, it did not involve the courts, and it did not involve the police department.
Well, perhaps something made it look fuzzy. If we had something that it was brought to the voters that we could change the charter for the state of Missouri, and if we could change the state,
no,
the charter for the state, because
we cannot. It's not a charter. The state
76, and they were trying to get that changed so that we could the police department could come.
Hold on, hold on a second. You know, that's the problem, and that's why it's so important that we not just accept what people tell us, that we actually go read the legislation. First of all, the state does not have a charter. The state has a constitution, okay? The power of the state controlling our police department is in the state statute, okay? It's not in the state constitution. So it would take a statutory amendment to change that. When we took up the home rule issue, specifically, go read it. Go read the first constitutional amendment that came in that allowed the city to even vote on restructuring their system. It did not involve anything concerning the courts, concerning the circuit attorney's office, and concerning the police department. No matter how many different kind of ways you try to say it, that didn't happen. That's specifically why in November, when we had the amendment, the proposition, and it was a almost like, what's your opinion? It was a non-binding referendum that said, do you want the police department to live in the city of St. Louis? And the reason why it was non-binding is because we do not have local control of the police department. And the only way that we can get local control of the police department is that there is an amendment to the state statute. And the voters in the city of St. Louis alone cannot change that state statute if it is done just by amending the statute. Now, there may be some other mechanisms, such as a lawsuit, that can get this into court or something of that nature, but I'm not going to allow people to give out misinformation and incomplete information on this issue. Go ahead, Renee.
Okay, and I have one other question. Okay, when this little young fellow was driving this rented van,
he was not driving it. He was not the driver. He was a passenger.
Oh, he was a passenger.
Yes, he was a passenger.
Okay, and why did the people call the police on this car?
They didn't. There is no indication that anybody called the police. It's There are more details in it that at this time, based on the information that was given to me and the circumstances under which it was given, it did not involve anybody calling the police.
Because I was wondering, you know, how did they,
pursue them. Let me say this. This is just speculation on my part. This was a brand new 2006 truck. These are two young people driving the truck. Perhaps the police assumed that the truck was stolen. I don't know. But there is no indication that anyone called the police about these young people being in this truck. But the truck definitely was not stolen.
It was in the paper that they were going 70 miles an hour in the neighborhood.
Yeah, well, that, we talked to people that live on the block, and it's quite an interesting story, okay?
All right.
Okay, you have a good day. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. This is the Morning Wake-Up Call, the Liz Brown Show. Liz is not here today, but Irene J. Smith is sitting in for Liz to remind you that tonight at 6 o'clock, at Walls Community Center, Kings Highway and Martin Luther King, be there. The board of the Public Service Commission will be taking up the issue of whether or not Ameren UE should receive a rate increase. Also, there is an emergency school board meeting at 5:30 at 801 North 11th. We've got to split our time. We need to be there as well. Stay tuned. We'll be back. I see you out there. I'm going to get to you before we go to the news.
This is Mark Glass. Tune in every Friday at 5:15 for What's New at the Movies on AM 920. I sit through the bad ones so you don't have to and give you an early heads up on the good stuff. So for advice on getting the best mileage from your entertainment budget, join me, Mark Glass, for What's New at the Movies, Friday afternoons at 5:15 on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues and the movies that matter most to you.
Just because it's not beach weather doesn't mean the sun's rays aren't powerful. In fact, wintry conditions can increase the risk of skin cancer because snow reflects up to 80% of ultraviolet radiation from the sun. To protect your skin, the Skin Cancer Foundation recommends applying an SPF 15 or higher sunscreen and wear protective clothing all year round. Remember, seek the shade, use sunscreen, and especially do not burn. For more information, visit skincancer.org. News to you from Radio Free St. Louis.
Prizes awarded on WGNU will be held for pickup at the radio station for 30 days. After 30 days, all items become the sole property of WGNU Radio to be disposed of at our discretion. In the case of event tickets, tickets will be held for 30 days or until the date of the event, whichever comes first. Prizes must be picked up at our studios, which are located at 265 Union Boulevard in St. Louis, unless otherwise specified.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Gloom and misery everywhere. Stormy weather. Just can't get my poor self together. I'm weary all the time.
We're just trying to give you a little sampling of Gladys's new CD. She's Gone Jazz, and the boards are entirely lit up. Let's talk to Ken, who's been hanging for a minute. John, I see you. We'll get to you next.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes. You know, you all are some patient people. You know, these white folks nationwide, the problems that we're having here, this is not a St. Louis problem. The same thing's happening in New York, New Jersey, Texas, Los Angeles, and whatever happened to the tape at the Jack in the Box?
Hmm.
Huh? I mean, these people are lousy, and they get some kind of enjoyment out of killing poor people. Now, in New York, when they killed this man, he didn't have a weapon. Didn't they look for his record?
Sean Bell.
Yeah. And I wasn't talking about him. Talking about the
Amadabi.
Right. He didn't have a weapon. Then right away they started looking into his record. if he'd have had any kind of run-in with the law, then they would have branded him a criminal. And my grandson was hit in the mouth by a lousy policeman. And, you know, when I thought about what I wanted to do, these are the lousiest people going. They can come up, knock on your door, you open the door, they kill you like they did the lady in Wellston, and the woman had a telephone in her hand. They said they thought it was a gun. But a lot of these white folks are scared to death. I was stopped over on Olive. I made a U-turn, and this guy jumps out and claims I did something illegal. And he said, "Have you got a driver's license?" I told him, "No, I don't have a license." I let him take me to the police station. I wasn't going to reach in my pocket. And so when I got down there, the desk sergeant said, "Why did you tell him you didn't have a license?" I said, "Because the man doesn't have any business having a gun, and he doesn't have any business being a police officer. They're just terrible, and I don't know, at some point we're going to have to come to the realization that they have declared open season on poor people. When's the last time they shot some white person and it was questionable? Can you tell me?
In the city of St. Louis, I don't know. Well, in Troy, they just shot and killed two young males in a truck, saying that the truck was rolling back on them. You know, mm-hmm. So it's getting tight, and
yeah.
And it makes it bad, you know, for individuals who are trying to do a good job. And I know police officers that live in our community and who are concerned about our community, but really are very frustrated because they see the lawlessness, okay?
Yeah, but
then they become targets if they move forward. So it's a difficult situation. We need local control of the police department. Ken, thank you. I'm going to move on. Thank you so much for calling in. John on the car phone.
Good morning, Irene. How are you?
I'm still here in 2007. I'm breathing. I can see. I'm talking to you.
It's always nice when we can tick off another year that we made it through.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
I wanted to add to this conversation by talking about Chief Mokwa's response so far to this issue of crime. To me, it's been exactly the wrong kind of response. The same day that this shooting happened, Mokwa was talking to the Post-Dispatch about his new strategy, and what he's said he was going to do is he's setting up a tactical unit, and he said they had his personal okay to take the gloves off and take back the streets. And, my God, I think, you know, that's time to duck and cover. When the police chief starts giving out that kind of rhetoric, and it's a license to the guys on the street to do whatever. And he said they're targeting neighborhoods. They're targeting, you know, quote-unquote problem neighborhoods.
But you know what's interesting to me? I mean, it's like people call in about, say, open market drug sales. And they know that the police department knows that it is going on. People call in. The police, if the people see it, certainly the police see it. So where are the police then?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the young people say, well, the only time they come up, they roll down. Certain crooked cops, they take the weapons off of them, they let them go. I guess they use those weapons as throwdowns, those police officers who are not honoring their commitment to protect and serve. You know, they shake them down for dope and money. And so then that puts, as I said earlier, that puts the police officer who does take serious his oath of protecting and serve, that places him at double danger. Because he's got the criminal on the one hand, then he's got the crooked cop on the other hand, and not knowing, well, if I shake this down or if I bust this set, is this a set that belongs to a particular police officer that's in the upper echelon of the police department? And then you have a police chief talking about we're going to take the gloves off. Well, you could start by simply patrolling my community.
Right. When he says he's going to, you know, target neighborhoods, well, if he just gave neighborhoods the same police protection that he gives other neighborhoods, that might be a step forward. But when he's got a, quote-unquote, tactical unit that's targeting neighborhoods, you know, that's just, you know, some rolling band of guys who are on the loose.
Where are our...
The community member who, you know, sees something happening and wants to call the police, but they don't know what kind of officer they're going to get when somebody shows up at their door.
And, John, the question has to be, where are our local elected officials, our state elected officials, our federal elected officials coming together to address this issue with the community? Where is the community engagement about what are we going to do along with the police department? Because this is a joint responsibility.
Yeah.
What are we going to do about this? You know,
well,
I you know, from time to time, I wear a red cardinal, I guess what they call a hoodie, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm gray-haired, so if I'm driving a late model car, I may not be targeted. But are you targeted simply because of what you wear or simply because what you are? I submit that there's much more to this story about this kid, and I am hoping that there is an independent, complete investigation of what transpired in the 5500 block of Greer on Friday.
Well, and when you talk about a, you know, independent investigation, I couldn't agree with you more, but where's our civilian review board? If the mayor vetoed, passed through the Board of Aldermen, they were being responsible about getting some community input into the department.
John, the mayor is too busy meeting with the Archbishop, trying to get him to open up Catholic schools that have been closed as charter schools.
Right.
That's where the mayor is. That's where the mayor is. The mayor is trying to establish, he's trying to privatize public schools and going to meet with the Archbishop about opening up what were Catholic schools and making them charter schools.
And where's our police chief? He, you know, he said, well, we've got to move forward on this issue of civilian review, so we'll pass something through the police board.
It's all
that
talk.
Was a totally eviscerated, ridiculous civilian review board. But did they even implement that?
Mm.
That was last spring. We haven't heard another word about it.
Because it is all talk, it is just spin, and there's no action behind it. We need an action plan to deal with the crime that is existing in our community. We need our state, federal, local, law enforcement, courts, circuit attorney, and the community coming together. There needs to be a state of emergency declared in the city of St. Louis to deal with this issue of crime that is devastating our community. Where are you, Mayor Slay, the chief executive of this city? When are you going to do something about the crime that is existing in our communities, where people cannot walk the street safely, where kids can't walk to the barbershop for fear that they will be attacked? Where are our police officers? Where are our city fathers? Where are our elected officials in dealing with this issue? Where is the public safety committee of the Board of Aldermen? Where are those individuals who are in Jefferson City? Where is the congressman in terms of bringing other resources to our community to address this issue? Where are you? It is a state of emergency.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think, you know, from the police department's viewpoint, they don't want to see community involvement because that means people, that means them opening up and people getting up into their mix and being able to see what they're doing and criticize what's going on. And the police department's never been interested in that kind of openness.
And again,
it's going to take a push from the other end.
And again, I totally agree with you, John, to a great degree. But I also say it is not just on the police department.
No.
It is on us as community and our elected officials and every other stakeholder in our community. We've got a state of emergency in our community. What are we going to do about it? I'm going to move on. John, thanks so much for calling in. Have a happy new year. I know I'll see you real soon.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
Good morning, Kathy.
Yeah, good morning, and happy new year to you also. Okay.
Kathy, you want to hold on until after the break?
All right.
All right, thank you, dear. This is the Morning Wake Up Call, the Liz Brown Show. This is Irene J. Smith sitting in for Liz. We're going to the news shortly. Our contact numbers are 454-0400. Long distance 1-877-920-WGNU, or you can log in on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news.
Time for us to use our power. Please do not beg folks for power. Nobody is going to give it to you.
total love, peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I'm hearing revolution in the air. Feel me, brother. Stop resisting.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble. More and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man. Tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. The nation is saying goodbye to a former president. The state funeral for Gerald Ford, the nation's 38th president, is now beginning at Washington's National Cathedral. ABC's Vic Ratner is there.
Mourners arriving here at National Cathedral for the services, like the funeral for former President Ronald Reagan. President Bush will speak, so will two of Gerald Ford's children. But this service will be somewhat simpler. It includes the Navy hymn for a former Navy man.
Mr. Ford's body was brought to the cathedral not by a horse-drawn caisson, but in a hearse, in keeping with his family's request that the service be low-key. But it has not, and it will not be short on sentiment. More from ABC News senior national correspondent Claire Shipman on Capitol Hill.
The former First Lady had an almost intimate moment with the man she loved, her husband of 58 years, on Monday as she stood by his casket, the former president lying in state on Capitol Hill. And elsewhere around the country, Americans paid their respects in other ways. At the Rose Bowl, the University of Michigan team honored Ford, a one-time football MVP at the school, by wearing his old number, 48, on their helmets. Claire Shipman, ABC News, Capitol Hill.
Surviving Presidents Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, and George H.W. Bush are attending. So are some of the Ford cabinet members, including former Defense Secretary Rumsfeld and Vice President Cheney, who served as Mr. Ford's chief of staff. Right after the service, the family will accompany Mr. Ford to a last trip home to Grand Rapids, Michigan, for burial tomorrow.
As do all other former presidents, Gerald Ford had a hand planning his own funeral. He chose the burial site along the banks of the Grand River in 1981. The ceremonies reflect Ford's desire to be less ostentatious than some previous presidential funerals, and according to Grand Valley State University's Matt McLogan, he wanted it to reflect the openness of his time in office.
That's ABC's Pam Coulter in Grand Rapids, Michigan. This is ABC News.
Today on Judge Kathy, a husband, a wife, and V8 100% vegetable juice.
My husband won't eat right.
Anytime I don't eat enough vegetables, she bops me on the forehead like this. And says, could have had a V8.
It's a love tap.
What's a bop?
It's a tap. Order in the court.
Yes, with Judge Kathy.
Sir, have you had any vegetables today?
Yes, I had oysters.
What?
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 Approach the bench.
What will Judge Kathy decide?
Yes, Your Honor. Ow!
You could have had a V8. Get out of my courtroom.
You bopped me, Your Honor.
It was a love tap.
Check your local listings.
Time to get organized. Office Depot has great deals on a wide assortment of file folders, binders, filing cabinets, and shredders, plus over 800 calendars and planners. So hurry in and get organized today. Office Depot, taking care of business.
Whoa, Office Depot.
This week, buy one, get one free on select plastic storage. Offer available in-store only on items of equal or lesser value.
Power crews in Nebraska are trying to restore electricity to 15,000 homes and businesses in the state that lost power in last week's blizzard. Tens of thousands in Kansas are also in the dark. 1 year ago today, 12 men were killed in an explosion at West Virginia's Sago coal mine. New state and federal regulations have been passed, but most aren't in place yet. Do you have a nasty boss? Get in line. Here's ABC's Dear to Bryant.
Ever had a boss that seemed almost diabolical?
As punishment for your desertion, it's company policy to give you the plague.
Seems many of us have. A Florida State University survey of more than 700 workers found that nearly 40% of bosses don't keep their promises. More than 25% make negative comments about those they supervise to other workers. Nearly the same number said their boss blamed others to cover up their own mistakes. An associate professor who worked on the survey said employees don't leave their job or company, they leave their boss, unless their boss beats them to it.
You're fired.
Deirdre Bryant, ABC News.
Daria Alvinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Bryant Meyer with your WGNU News Update for the 9 o'clock hour. In the news this Tuesday, the new minimum wage law in the state of Missouri went into effect yesterday. Most minimum wage workers in the state will now make $6.50 an hour, up from $5.15. The new law applies to Missouri retail or service businesses whose annual gross sales are $500,000 or more. The minimum base wage for employers of tipped workers is $2.13 an hour, but if the hourly wage and tips do not equal at least $6.50 an hour, the employers must make up the difference. A Washington Park man is charged in the stabbing death of a Metro East woman. The body of 24-year-old Allison Stahl was found Friday at Frank Holton State Park in East St. Louis. 34-year-old Walter Jennings was arrested shortly after the discovery of the victim's body, and he is charged with the murder. Police are not saying what evidence links the suspect to Stahl's death. The St. Louis area's Baby New Year arrived shortly after midnight yesterday. Mike and Kim Rizzo weren't expecting their daughter to be born for several more days, but she entered the world at 12:04 a.m. at St. John's Mercy Medical Center on New Year's Day. The new parents and baby are all doing well. Finally this hour, the offseason has been relatively quiet for the Cardinals so far. The Redbirds did re-sign outfielder Jim Edmonds and utility man Scott Spezio. They also signed second baseman Adam Kennedy and right-handed pitcher Kip Wells, filling two open roster spots for under $20 million. The main deal completed at winter meetings was a contract extension with pitching ace Chris Carpenter that keeps him in St. Louis through at least 2011. That's your look at local news for the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeyer for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. Let's take a look at your traffic and your weather. Westbound 5570 on the Poplar Street Bridge. You can expect some final delays as the final morning rush hour approaches there. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois Bank into downtown is looking good. Westbound 44 between River Repair and Shrewsbury. Look for traffic building due to an accident. That's at Shrewsbury, so use caution. And then there are a number of ongoing work sites. Just use caution and slow down through those work zones. That is a look at this hour's traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and Thursday. Mostly sunny today, high in the lower 50s. This evening, mostly clear, low in the lower 30s. For Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high in the upper 50s. And Friday, mostly partly sunny in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy throughout the day with a high in the 50s. Currently, we have clear skies and 53 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting some clouds and 32. Stay tuned. Liz Brown is out today. Instead, we have Irene J. Smith filling in for her, so she's up next. Take another look at your news and your weather in the top of the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Put a spell on you, yeah. Because you're mine. Oh, baby, 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 baby. You better stop the things you do. Hey, I ain't lying. No. You know I can't stand it. You run.
Oh, well. Queen Latifah has grown up. She's doing some standards, and they sound lovely. Before we broke for the news, I was speaking with Sister Kathy, and she was beginning her conversation, her comments on the police. And please don't misunderstand. I don't believe that the conditions that exist in our community are entirely the fault of the police. It is a joint responsibility to provide a safe and nurturing environment for our children and for ourselves. Go ahead, Kath.
Yeah, I haven't heard that song since I was a small girl. I agree with the sister and Brother Malik, but I figure that Brother Malik and brothers like him should get together and organize an African-American man troop to face the mayor, Mocha, and anyone in Jefferson City with the proper papers or venues or whatever it takes to get this thing about the police venue under the authority of the people of the city. Because I was here in 89. I worked for a daycare center out of Fairview Heights.
Mm-hmm.
And I was making, we were getting ready for nap time. This little boy walks up to me and he says, teacher. I said, what? He said, my dad's going in hunting tonight. You know what I'm talking about, the N-word, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I said, do you know who the N is? He said, yes. My daddy said he's black. I said, maybe I'm black. He said, oh, no, he don't mean you. He means Ian's. I said, okay. So I asked the rector, I said, can I speak to his daddy before he goes home? So she let me. So I went to him and I asked him, I said, I told him the comment his son had made. And he gave me a sneery look like, you know, what are you doing talking to me? I said, well, what are you going to do about it? I said, because he's in my class. He said, I'll speak to my son. But it wasn't like I'll speak to my son and make him change his ways. The little boy was standing right there looking at me, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you know what message a child got, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he took him out of my classroom.
Mm-hmm.
But I just said, now, this has been going on since 89. I mean, it's not going to change till we get to the root.
Mm-hmm.
If we take it to the end of the soil, we got to go back to where it began.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Jefferson City, wherever it takes to get the legal authority over these policemen, because, you know, I cry when I hear about young men being killed, our young men being killed. But I don't like for anybody's child to be killed, just like Sidney Sheehan. But the idea that they have open season on us, and they figure that they can go hunting us anytime they want to. Look, we need some deacons. You hear me? We need some black men that's going to stand up and be men and not let this happen. I saw those policemen standing with their arms folded over this young man's dead body like they had a right to stand there.
If
I had a Gatling gun, believe you me, I would have used it.
You know what is so even
horrible.
Even so disturbing was some of the provocative things that some of the police officers are reported to have said
to
the
every
people.
Every time they kill one of ours, he's standing there, it was justifiable homicide. They need to get him.
It was interesting that he told some of the young people, now, you know, often when individuals die and in our community, it's become prevalent now that you can get a T-shirt printed in a day. They turned around and told him, now you can go get your T-shirts printed. So, I mean, it was reported that those type of statements were made to the police, which could have been something to provoke and could have had a more volatile situation after what appears to be a cold-blooded murder of a child. Okay.
In the African American community to have arms. I'm telling you, that would stop a whole bunch of stuff.
You know, I think about the Deacons of Defense.
Hey,
you know, I think about the Deacons
some
of Defense. I think about the Black Panther Party.
That's
and it's
right.
Like, I can remember when I was a kid, Kathy, growing up in Cochran Housing Projects, when the police, I mean, they just really just disregarded Cochran, with the exception of maybe Joe Reynolds and Foster and a couple of other folks, they didn't even come in, you know, so the men down there had to come together.
That's right.
But I'm saying that our men certainly need to be involved in our community with our children, but we are also paying for a police department, for police protection.
But it didn't stop right at one incident. It should go on and on and on until this thing is changed. My mother told me small drippings will wear away a stone. We need to stay on this thing, just like Jamali is staying on with Reginald. Everything that has to do with our children, we should stay on it until it's changed. They don't want us living in North St. Louis anyway. They want our land for corporate enterprise. But our lives are just as important to us as theirs are to them.
That's
true. It's
time
for us to change this mess. We shouldn't take any more of this mess no longer. We need some men. That's what we need. You know the women will stand up any day.
All right, sister. Thank you.
Okay,
hope to
care.
See you this evening.
Oh, you will.
All right.
Okay, bye-bye.
Let's see what Brother Obadiah has to say. Good morning and Happy New Year.
All right. Happy New Year to you, Mrs. Smith. Mrs. Smith, you know, I'm glad that you brought up the subject about the police and where's the black men. Because, you know, it's like the old saying says, if you don't know why something exists, then you'll never understand it. You can have all the knowledge in the world of it, but you don't understand. That's why we don't understand ourselves. And I just want to get to this. When you look for the black man is the one who was lucky enough to get a job and be exactly like the person who we're saying oppressing us today. Let's go back to the first police officer. We sent our kids through the public schools and teaching them about all that. But he was the first police officer. He was a good officer. He was this. But you had another side of a group of people who hated him, who hated that black police officer because he went along with the program that he had John on the police department. And that was that he couldn't arrest a white man. He couldn't, the only thing he could do was to beat black folks upside of their head, his own people. If he saw a white man rape his mom and sister, he couldn't do nothing about it. But he stayed there, and we made him like some kind of hero. Now, when you're talking about the N-words, the first place that you heard the most N-words was in the jailhouse by black police officers. So when the black man tried to raise himself up in the black panel party, Snakes, Everest Cleaver, and all of these people, we was out there, we would go and run a white construction company out of our area.
All right, brother. Thank you so very much for your comments. We're nearing a break. This is the Liz Brown Show, the Morning Wake Up Call. This is Irene J. Smith sitting in for Liz. I'll be back. I'll see you. We're going to get to you after the break.
Hi, this is now Hall of Famer Wade Boggs, and I'd like to talk to you about another exclusive group that I belong to that has changed my life. I'm talking about the thousands of guys who, just like me, have decided to take control of their hair loss and regrow their hair permanently with the pros at Medical Hair Restoration. The best thing about this club is that you see the rewards every day. Having my hair back has made me look and feel younger than I have in years. And that's the ultimate vote of confidence.
If you're balding or thinning, Medical Hair Restoration, the nation's leader in microsurgical hair transplantation, wants to send you a free DVD package explaining just how easy and painless their hair replacement procedure is. Call 800-410-1832. That's 800-410-1832. Take control of your hair loss and get this free information package sent to you with tons of before and after pictures and testimonials. There's no cost, no obligation. Call 800-410-1832. That's 800-410-1832.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
What you need to know, when you need to know it. The award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Baby, you are the soul who snaps my control. Such a funny thing, but every time you're near me, I never can behave.
You give me a smile and then I'm wrapped up in your magic. Music's all around me. Crazy music.
Ooh.
That keeps
they're young. They grow up.
Me so very close to
Moody's mood. All right. A little taste of this. You know, Brother Obadiah pointed out something. And that is when African-American men or women, because now women are permitted to be among our police officers, when they go into an environment that is a paramilitary environment where you follow orders, and if you have an atmosphere where racism exists, where it is known and understood that the value of one life is not as valued as another life, depending on the hue or the color of the person's skin, then it's going to become part of your mentality, or it can become, depending on the type of person and the character of your personality, what you will do and how you treat and how you use and how you respect those who have the same skin color as you. And you take that and couple it with the fact that we basically could have an occupied force in our city because the police board voted that the police officers, you know, basically after a certain period of time, they don't have to even live in the city. So it's just like many of the Iraqis feel about the U.S. military occupying their country. It becomes an occupied territory, and you are viewed as something less than human. I'm going to go to the phone lines and let Sister D talk about schools.
Yes, good morning, Sister IJ.
Good morning.
I just, I'm really concerned about St. Louis City, period. And the foundation of our city is our education system. And I was online yesterday and I went to the mayor's website. And his predictions for the year don't mention anything about the education of our people. It doesn't mention anything about his poverty plan that he had last year. It doesn't mention anything about any of those things. It talks about Cherokee Street drawing more pedestrians and diners than Euclid on at least one Friday night a week. What sense does that make with crime skyrocketing? And a lot of our babies that are engaging in crime is all based on the fact that some of them can't read or add or whatever. And for the CEO of this city, the mayor basically, the person that says, I am the mayor, this is my stuff, for him to say, let a state entity come in and take over something that belongs to its citizens, to me, that says that that is a person that is spineless, has no consideration for the people that live in this community. Anytime you'll just hand over the weakest of your people, the most needy of your people, which is our children. The people that don't have a clue could care less about what happens with them in their education system. So I'm frustrated with that. I mean, you're talking about rebuilding malls and a Wi-Fi network when you're afraid to go shopping, when the children are going to school, who knows what they'll see. You know, all sorts of things are going on. So I just want people to be really aware of what's going on in this city and to start taking a stand on it.
Well, you know, one thing is clear, you know, and being fair to the mayor, is that in 2001, when he issued his blueprint for improving St. Louis, there was not a great deal in there about improving the public school system. He wants to privatize public education, just as he went to the Archbishop talking about creating charter schools, and just as is my understanding that he had a companion, who I'll mention maybe on Alan LeLou, who requested the same thing. You know, you look at what are my resolutions, what are my wishes, what are my predictions? What are you going to do about our public school system?
Yes.
What are you going to do about making sure that those in our city who stayed here when it was difficult to stay here, that they have a stake? What are you going to do about those homeowners who are being pushed out of their homes when they stayed, they paid their taxes, they maintained their homes, but because a commercial developer comes in, you think it's okay to take their land? You know, Scripture tells us that we will be judged about how we treat the least of us. And we have not seen anything that indicates any concern about, in any real way, for the poor of our city, for our public schools, for the homeless, and homeowners. It's almost like you don't really own it. You just have a extended lease on it until a developer comes by and decides that, that will make a nice business enterprise and we can make more money. Well, this is capitalism. So capitalism says, if you want it, then pay me for it. Pay me what I want for this. If this is my house, then pay me for it. Thanks for calling in. We're going to go to Charles, who wants to talk about, I'm sorry, Tony's been holding. Let's see what Tony has to say about crime.
Well, first of all, Happy New Year to you, and God bless you.
Same to you.
Well, to me, when I was listening to you earlier this morning, I think you hit upon an excellent point, which is, the problem, as I see it, is multifaceted, from the drugs that come into this country to the readability of guns and the fact that people can go and buy an AK-47 or MAC-10 and where these guns are coming from, and the fact the drug culture has a lot to do with the perpetuation of prostitution, burglary to feed the drug habit, blah, 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 blah. So when you look at the multifacetedness of it, it's not just the police. It's not just the parents. It's not just drugs and guns. It's just so many different things to, and I know some people don't like me to say this, gangster rap and the subliminal messages of glorifying a hoodlum or a dope dealer or a thug and acceptance of the thug drug culture. And so when you look at all of this, the one question that comes to mind, now that we've presented the problem and we know what it is, what can we possibly do within the realm of reality to deal with finding a solution? My solution is you have to have solidarity with the entire community, people, men, women, churches, and until we as a people can have that camaraderie and that solidarity and move just like the Million Man March or anything else, but therein lies the problem. How do you get the multitude of people to become solidarity and move in a positive direction to make a difference to where you're not intimidated by the thug? You're not worried that if you open your mouth and snitch and point out a no-good son of a gun, he's going to come by and shoot your house up or set your house on fire. But when you have an intimidation factor and you have the hoodlum mentality to where people are scared and they have to live in their house like they're in prison with bars, an ADT burglar alarm, and a gun and a dog. You know, so I guess what I'm trying to focus on is that when you realize that the problem is multifaceted and there's so many different variables to the problem, how do you begin to find a reasonable, rational way of finding a solution?
It's just like it's just like an ant eating an elephant.
Yeah.
It's one bite at a time.
Yeah.
And, you know, you indicated all these different forces need to come together and identify, prioritize. And one of the things that Ron Henderson did when he was police chief, and I think he was an excellent police chief,
right,
is he met, you know, at the request of some local aldermen. We met with Ron Henderson, and we talked about particular crimes and what we could do about it. And actually, we kind of worked on a little plan to try to combat the crimes that we were aware of in our community. And he talked about calls for service. You know, you call, now it's always encourage people to call 911. And I understand the concern because a lot of policemen will come up to your doors, okay?
Yeah.
But, you know, call 911 because he indicated to us that's how they allocate their manpower, based upon the number of calls for service.
Well, you can go to a payphone and put a wad of gum in your mouth and camouflage your voice. You ain't got a call from your house where they got caller ID. Go use a payphone somewhere and make an anonymous call and put some marbles or toilet paper in your mouth to camouflage your voice. There's many techniques of being able to drop a hint on somebody, but the thing is that if you and I know who the dope dealers are, just as an example, we know who the guys are that on New Year's were shooting their guns, and it sounds like the Mekong Delta. I mean, where are the guns coming from? This has gotten so bad where the feds need to be called in, and the ATF and the DEA, because if you got guys that can go out down the street and buy an AK-47 or a Chinese SKS, where are these weapons coming from? How is
exactly. They're coming from, and they're... Have you noticed that they're more on the streets since we went to war?
That's what I'm talking about.
All right, now, thank you for your call. This is the Morning Wake Up Call. This is the Liz Brown Show. You hear the music, you all. We're getting ready to go to a break. This is yours truly, Irene J. Smith. I'll be back with you after the break. Stay tuned.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 till 4 on AM 920. WGNU discusses the issues that matter most to you every day. And if you have a relationship problem with a friend, coworker, or family member, it really matters to me. So call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA. Tune in every Monday through Friday afternoon from 2 until 4 and take on the day with me, Dr. Laura, on AM 920 WGNU.
Get a free Razor cell phone delivered free to your door. Don't want a free Razor? Then go to letstalk17.com and choose from hundreds of other free phones. Join 500,000 users who found the smartest way to buy their cell phones. Never pay retail again. At letstalk17.com, you can compare prices on phones and service plans from all the major carriers. Find the coolest new phone at the coolest price. Find the best current special offers. Read what folks have to say about their phones and plans. They actually rate and review their phones and service plans so you know which ones to pick. Do it all in the comfort of your own home. If your plan is ending, now's your chance. Try your new phone risk-free for 7 days with free 48-hour shipping. Letstalk17.com is the only way to get the absolute best deal possible. Right now, get a free Razor after $50 mail-in rebate. This is an exclusive online offer at letstalk17.com. New 2-year service plan agreement required. One-time wireless activation and early termination fees may apply. Go to letstalk17.com. That's letstalk17.com.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap, weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
Real life, on the cutting edge. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Heaven in your eyes, brightest stars that shine up above you in the clear blue skies. How I worry about you, just can't live my life without you, baby. Come here, don't have no fear. Oh, is there a wonder why?
Oh, my. Boy, we need so much love. So much love in our community. We've been talking about conditions that exist in our community that we are all responsible for correcting, because it is our responsibility to provide a safe and nurturing environment in our community. And so the question becomes, how do we do that? So I'm just going to, the boards are all lit up. So I'm going to go right to the phone lines and get some input. Mr. Cody.
That means this?
Yes, you.
Oh, hey.
That's you, Mr. Hey. Cody.
You know what? I mean, you know, when the lights went out, Lil called me, told me to come up there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It must have been about 6 or 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And I went up there, and the Miller came up. I think Terry Kenny came up.
Mm-hmm.
And we were on the outside talking.
Mm-hmm.
So two cops pulled up, and they were little cops, and they didn't weigh 275 pounds between them.
Mm-hmm.
You all just looking at their face, had club on, they had a club stick on their arm, everything, you know. And I told the Miller, I said, Miller, introduce yourself to the cop. The Miller introduced himself to the cop. And you all seen it. They broke down like little kids, two cops did. They said, all right, we go in there and look around.
He told him, yeah, you know. And Cliff said, go to East Tennessee. I said, you don't mean like everybody else. You know what? I mean, it ain't no job no more being a cop now. It's a survivor now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they come like they're scared now.
They do. They do. I mean, a lot of them look like little kids.
Yep. Yeah.
Little kids. And the problem is many of them are not accustomed to. I saw them pull over this young man that I knew. And kid works two jobs. And so I was coming, he was going west on West Florida, and I was going east. I was going home. And so I just pulled over. I was on the opposite side of the street. And it was like five police cars pulled over, you know, right behind. One of them pulled this kid over. So I'm just sitting there. I'm not going to go over there and interfere in any way, but I was just observing them. And you could see the disdain in a couple of them's face, the fact that I even just stopped to look to make sure that this young man that I knew was, you know, whatever, wasn't a problem. If it was a problem, you know, I could go and inform his family or whatever. But it was the fear in their eyes. And I understand that there are guns on the street. Jamila and I were talking yesterday about the type of weapons that we heard on New Year's Eve.
Right, you're right.
I mean, these are weapons that, man, that we had not heard in a while. You know, AK.
They shoot on one time, they shoot eight.
Right.
Times,
they shot, then they stopped, then it's like they loaded back up, and then they go another half hour. And it's like, man, this is ridiculous. And this was happening. So if you know that people are firing these type of weapons on New Year's Eve, you know what they have on a daily basis throughout our community.
But, you know, I mean, you know, I got a ticket on that to be. The Miller called me, told me, get the sign off of Union.
Mm-hmm.
Got the sign on the back of my truck. It was sticking out on the back of my truck. A black cop now. He pulled me over on that to be. You could stick it out too far and everything. And your police ain't right on your car. I said, I know it ain't, you know. And he wrote me a ticket, you know. The black cop, you know. Mm-hmm. He said, sitting there, I want no number. It's not a sign. What's still enough, you know? We don't have no more, no kind of way, you know. But in St. Louis, they always stop me. Oh, that's it, me. The place ain't right. Tell them, go ahead, Cody, go ahead. Let me go, you know. I know a guy over there. Let me go. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we, you know, my son-in-law is a cop in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
In Detroit, you know. He said, Cody, man, I don't get no senior citizen, no ticket. I don't get no senior citizen, no ticket, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But these guys, man, they don't care. They're behind everybody tickets. They get anybody a ticket, you know.
Mm.
Well, you have a good day, sir. So keep doing good work here.
All right, Cody. I need to holler at you, okay?
I got you.
All right. Bye-bye. Take care. All right. Joe's been holding. Joe.
Okay. Hold tight and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
You know, this is the first time for me. I run into you throughout the community.
Yeah,
the
I see you at the post office. I see you at the post office.
Yes,
I see
indeed.
You everywhere.
I'm a little bit excited. Because, you know, I got a thing with the post dispatch. You know, they always salute to excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I always ask, where Irene at? And where is Percy Green at? You know, and Mr. Troop, you know, those are my people that would be my candidate for to salute to excellent, you know, and I just don't see those kind of people. I should say Jamal also, you know.
It, you know what? It doesn't matter.
And then Lynn Brown, you
know,
also.
You know, it doesn't matter. You do what you do, and it is not with the intent of being recognized, and I don't need them. I'm gonna give my salute.
Yes.
You know, I'm gonna try to walk the right walk.
Yes,
and I'm gonna try to give my salute, my final salute.
It do my heart good too when I see you, cause you really could be out there in the county or anywhere in Missouri, you know. But you choose to stay here.
That's where my This is where my heart is.
Yes, indeed. Hey, on this crime thing, you know, and first thing came to my mind is timing is everything. You know, a troop wrote a letter in there, I think, to St. Louis August, you know, about how we need to come down on these youngsters that wrecking our community, making our profit go down, you know, housing profit go down and all that. And then got to come right back and deal with the police on this junk they did to old damn Greer. You know, it looked like they're trying to spread her too thin, you know. Mm. I mean, and then the cap man got killed over there, you know. I'm waiting on that key and see what we could do on that, you know. But
Mr. Taylor, I mean, it was criminal. There's a man that's been in our community for almost 30 years.
So when you said one bite at a time, that's what I wrote down. So
that's all we can do.
Yes, indeed.
We can do is do just like an ant eating an elephant, just one bite at a time. You know, we can't throw our hands up. Alderman Troop and I was talking, said, you know, you tired. I'm like, this is New Year's Day, and I had planned to read all day. New Year's Day, I had planned to do anything other than get up, have my morning meditation and prayer, eat me a little bit, and just read. I have so many stacks of newspapers and magazine articles that I wanted to read. That didn't happen yesterday because we were out in the street doing what we have done in the past. And I told somebody, I thought I was through with this. I thought it was going to be some younger folks to step in and do this.
Well,
but
whatever.
We just do what we do until we can't do it no more. But we just got to keep biting.
I can feel that.
All right, brother.
Okay.
Take care. It's so good to talk with you.
Okay, good talk to you too.
Good talk to you as well. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning, Miss Smith, and Happy New Year.
Same to you, dear, and to your family.
Thank you. I wanted to make a comment about the San Luis Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, my son and myself, we had dropped my two daughters off at Union Station. And we were on Washington, and my son got pulled over by a police officer. Asked my son for his driver's license. Never told us why he was being stopped. Made him get out the car. Another police officer came on the passenger side, asked for my name, asked if I had any identification on me, which I didn't because we were just dropping my kids off. Made my son get out the car, sit on the curb. Never told him why he was stopped. Then another police car pulled up, asked for his driver's license, asked for my name, my social security number, and all that. Then one of the police officers came to the car on the driver's side and told me to pivot my body and turn my face towards the window.
So
he wanted me to do that, I don't know. And he did like a little quick little search, which I didn't do. I didn't turn my face. I sat exactly how I was. And he put his hand between the cushion of my son's, the driver's seat, you know, like he was looking for something. And I never would turn my face. And I didn't understand why he wanted me to turn my body and my face away from him.
I mean, it would be pure speculation on either our part. Uh-huh. I mean, I don't know whether he was intending to drop something or what he was intending to do. You know, and certainly nobody, and at least I'm not criticizing the police for doing whatever their job is. I mean,
right.
If you stop somebody, they got, you know, improper plates, da-da-da. You know, people do give people warnings and things of that nature. But I guess when people become irate is because when they see... you know, mother, kids going about, and the police stop them, which if there's something wrong, the police has a concern, they certainly have the responsibility and the right to do so.
He never gave him a ticket. He wasn't ticketed. And then the police officer made a comment. He said, so you're his girlfriend? I said, no, that's my son. He said, that's your son? I thought he was your boyfriend. I said, no, that's my son. That's my oldest child. My son is 26. And what difference would it have made if I was his girlfriend or his mother?
Well, see, Robin, you can't help that you look young now. You can't help that you look young. But I guess the problem, and I hear people in my community, seniors who have property, who have maintained their property, they just become livid because they say, why is it, you know, you giving me a ticket, but yet still we can't never get you to come down the street to those guys who are stealing cars. They come down there, do whatever they do. They park the cars, come back. We call you two or three times. You don't even come.
And the car would still stay there.
And the car is still there. And that's why people become so irate. When the police, oh, yes, still doing their job, you know, and pulling you over because you have improper place or whatever, but you're going to stop to do this, yet we can't even get a police, and it may not be this particular police, but we can't get this police to come and find out why or who's driving this car, because perhaps sometimes if we got response on the police coming to incidents where we report that the kids are parking the car, then maybe we can prevent some of those chases.
And Ms. Smith, I see it on a daily basis. I live in the JVL. I see these young kids in these stolen cars on a daily basis. I mean, just driving all around Thomas and, you know, Bratner. Just driving. If you don't call, you don't see them. You'll still see the same stolen car. They'll get back in their stolen car and do some more joyrides.
It's a state of emergency.
It really is.
It's a state of emergency. So where is our leadership in this city? Where is the leadership in, you know, not just the mayor, you know, all of our leadership, elected, state, federal, local. We need to hear from you, and we need to know what is going to be done about this crime that is devastating our community.
And as far as the schools, with the schools, you know, I live by Bashan High School. Bashan High School doesn't have a band any longer.
Hmm.
They don't even have a choir. They don't have any extracurricular activities for these young people to do.
And then you look at the fact that it's my understanding that the community education centers, that their budget was cut, which is the city provides money through block grant. Their money was cut. So those provide structured activities for our children. Thank you, Robin.
Thank
it's good
you.
Hearing
good
for you. Tell your kids I said hello.
Okay, I sure will. Thank you.
Goodbye. All right. Craig, who's been hanging for a minute, good morning.
Hey, how you doing, Irene?
All right. You want to hold on until after the break?
Yes.
I'll get right back to you. This is the Morning Wake Up Call, the Liz Brown Show. This is yours truly, Irene J. Smith, sitting in for Liz, who is not in today. We'll be back after the break. Stay tuned.
America needs is affordable health insurance. Finding affordable health insurance for you and your family, it's on everyone's mind right now. If you're self-employed, it's on your mind too. One of the things we face as entrepreneurial Americans is finding affordable health insurance. Well, I've found a company you can call right now and get affordable health insurance. Midwest National Life Insurance Company of Tennessee. Write this number down. 877-652-7793. That's 877-652-7793. Midwest specializes in helping entrepreneurs of all kinds, those of us who run small businesses or don't get health insurance where we work, to protect our families with affordable health insurance. Call 877-652-7793. Not available in all states. Association membership is required in most states. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Exclusions and limitations apply.
You in need of financial information that can change your life? Then you need to listen to the Pastor's Hour to Empower each and every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock here on WGNU. Hosted by Minister Ernest Greenlee, Reverend James Willoughby, Mr. Robani, Miss Daisy, and Doc Brown. It's designed to provide solutions to the needs of the people, the church, pastors, seniors, youth, and the community at large. Remember, your life does have value. All you need to do is unlock the potential. Find out how on the Pastor's Hour to Empower every Tuesday night at 8 here on AM 920 WGNU.
The struggle for fairness on the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
About this weather, my dear, this little dream might fade away. There I go talking out of my head. Oh, pretty baby, won't you come and put our two hearts together? That would make me strong and brave. Oh, when we are one, I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid.
Wow. That's Queen Latifah. Oh, it's beautiful. It's just beautiful watching the transition of music from generation to generation, and particularly the standards. It's just nice to hear some of our young folk, so to speak, do their interpretations of those standards. I want to go back to Craig. We've had a very lively discussion here today talking about conditions in our community and how we are all jointly responsible. But we see a lacking in leadership from our elected officials, state, federal, and local, and the chief executive of our city, the mayor, as well as our police chief. Craig.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, dear.
What I wanted to say was that I want to speak on the mayor and the police chief.
Go right ahead.
And what I wanted to speak on was their constituency. Now, does that mean the people who voted for you or the people you represent? Your constituency is... Which one is that?
You know what? That's an interesting thing. Because certainly you are the mayor, you're the police chief, so your constituency is the entire city of St. Louis.
Okay.
But who you perceive as your constituency is really, I guess, a point that people make that they don't. He's not my mayor, and he doesn't consider me his citizen.
Right, because I know when he looks at the city and he looks at who votes for him, I know he recognizes that black people are not voting for him. And I know he also recognizes that he's in one of the most racist cities in the country. And if he puts too much, I'm not saying he would want to anyway, but if he puts too much energy or effort towards helping the black community, I think he would actually lose some of his votes from the white people in this city.
You know what? I don't think so.
You know?
I think that, and I think he understands that very well, because as a result of our challenging him in 05, we have seen a greater visibility of Mr. Slay in certain portions of our city, and we've seen certain things being done in our city that heretofore were not being done. I think that so North, it's going to eventually catch up with South St. Louis. You know, they just had a murder over in, on the south side, in an area that the people were just really just totally taken aback, because that doesn't happen in my neighborhood. That happens over north or somewhere else, but not in my neighborhood.
Yeah, I hear that all the time.
And so goes this city in North St. Louis. It's going to impact this entire city. And that's why I'm kind of looking forward to some of the things that I've heard Lewis Reed talk about in terms of a holistic legislative agenda that assist all of the aldermen in better representing and better providing services to their community. Because here we are with the crime that is existing in our community, and we don't hear anything about a state of emergency. We hear this mumbly-gumbly, there's going to be a plan, but we don't hear any strong statements about what is going to be done, and a strong plan and a community-driven plan that will address crime as it exists in our community. Yes, there are individual issues like folks who allow children to do criminal activity in their house. They are responsible. They should deal with that. But at the same time, when you have responsible citizens calling the police time after time after time after time after time, the people become so disinterested, you know, I'm not calling the police anymore. We call them, nothing is done. We call about certain conditions in our community, and they, you know, the trash isn't cleaned up. So then somebody else comes along and dumps on top of it. So it makes it, you know, it's kind of disgusting. It gives you, you're not motivated. And I just hope that our people hold on to hope. Because this is our city. People have invested in this city. They've invested in their property. We have a right to have a safe environment for ourselves and our children.
Yeah.
And we need to insist upon it. And we've got to do it, as I said, one bite at a time. And we need to call on our elected officials. I mean, all of them, the aldermen, the state reps, Congressman Clay, where are you in terms of talking about dealing with crime? And don't give me that stuff I'm in Washington, that's a local matter. Well, guess what? All politics are local, and these local people elect you. And we have an issue that needs to be dealt with in a holistic way and not piecemealed.
And Irene, when Raymond Bosley was the mayor, I remember back then, that's when we had that crack epidemic that hit.
That's right.
I remember him going over into the worst neighborhoods in St. Louis trying to talk to them young men.
Of course.
He was on Penrose right there, right off of Grand. I remember him going over there talking to those young men. I mean, he really was concerned, because I believe that he knows that St. Louis can be a different place. He has seen.
Of course it could. Of course it can. I mean, you take people like, look at Anthony Shaheed and them, those brothers mm-hmm. that went out there in the street. You know, and many times, I remember at one point, Bertha and I, we had a bus. I mean, a big bus of brothers who just converged on the street. As I was talking to young brothers yesterday, One brother said, you know, he gets off of work, you know, and I could tell from looking at him, he was intelligent, but I could tell that he was a drinker. He goes to work, but then he comes and hangs on the corner. Another brother says, Miss Smith, I've been to jail. If I had a dollar for every job application I put in, I would be rich. We want to work. We want some jobs. So we need drug treatment. We need job training. We need jobs. Why isn't it that entities and ideas that people come forth with to help rebuild our community that will also give jobs to our people, why is it that those agendas are not being pushed forward?
I think what it is that the mayor and the police chief, they can't even see St. Louis as being the great city that we know it is.
That's exactly, because they are so narrow-minded with focusing in, and particularly the mayor. If you look at his wishes for the year or whatever, New Year's resolution or best guesses for the year, whatever he calls them, they are all primarily centered on development and business. And you have to have a balance to addressing the social problems that exist in our community, homelessness, drug addiction, the dropout rate. That's not the responsibility of just the school system. That is the responsibility of all of us, and particularly our elected officials and us as community.
It's a great city with great
potential. It is. It's a great city with great potential. Thanks for calling, Craig. I'm going to try to get these other calls
right,
in before the end of the hour. Have a happy new year.
Right,
all right. We're going to go to Steve. Good morning.
Good morning. Ms. Smith?
Yes, you're on the air, dear.
Yes, how are you this morning?
I am blessed.
Good, good. I guess, you know, I've been on the phone for a while. I wanted to, you know, probably spend a couple moments on the phone with you and say this. About, you know, earlier you saying that, you know, we're in a state of emergency and, you know, we need, we're our leaders in this community. I would like to say that, you know, the leaders of this community are out here. I think that when it comes to... You know,
where are they?
Well, we're here. The thing is, you know...
Where are they? Where is here, Steve?
Out in the community.
Where is the summoning of a summit or something to address the crime in the community? I'm not saying that elected officials are not doing anything. That is not what I'm saying. I know that we have hardworking state reps. We have hardworking aldermen. We have perhaps a hardworking congressman. I don't know about that. But I do know that we are in a state of emergency right now, and I have not seen our elected officials call for a joint meeting to discuss and to put to task the mayor of this city and the police department in the guise of the Board of Police Commissioners and the police chief in terms of what are you going to do? What is the specific plan for addressing the crime that, despite all of the spins in the world, whether we're number one or number 20, we have a crime problem in our city. What are you going to do to address it?
Well, that's just the thing. You know, I mean, I don't really consider them to be leaders, you know, the elected officials. I think they're just in Congress to look for a job.
Okay, you're talking about the real leaders. Is that what you mean, Steve, when you said the leaders are out there?
Yes, I'm talking about the grassroots leaders. I'm not
that you're very okay. Thank you. You're exactly true. The Jamala Rogers and others are out there. You know
exactly. I mean, you know, I think one of the tools that we forget that we have in our arsenal is the fact that, you know, we need to hold back our dollars, you know, boycotts and whatnot. I know most of our elders can speak on this, you know, with Martin Luther King and the boycotting of the bus system down in the South, which, you know, ultimately broke the back of the, Jim Crow and, you know, allowed him to, go forth with the campaign of, you know, doing something about equal rights. You know, we live in a capitalist society, okay? And whether you're a leader, whether you're a statesman, a congressman, a representative, one thing that we all forget is that this is a capitalist society. We need to take control of the money in our community. I think that once we begin to take back the money in our community, we can start to see things happen. I look at, you know.
Now, I agree. Now, I really agree with what you're saying there. If we don't control the economics in our community, because if we totally control the economics in our community, we could certainly change the complexion of our community in terms of conditions that exist.
I definitely, you know, I mean, we, you know, I, with our community, I understand that, you know, I look at us sometimes and I say to myself, wow, we are suffering, you know, and I think that the reason why we're suffering is because we continue to try to look at these entities that we are, you know, that are our so-called leaders, you know, and these people for, you know, over hundreds of years now have shown us that they're not going to do anything. It is up to us. I look at other ethnic groups that, you know, basically come over here, like the Asians and whatnot. You don't see them running for office. They take care of their businesses. They become entrepreneurs. I don't care if they just put up a restaurant or something. You know, they do something.
Okay. All right, Steve. Thank you. This has been the Morning Wake Up Call. Liz Brown has been off. Thank you so much, Steve, for your comments and very valid points. This is Irene J. Smith. I've enjoyed the time I've had with you. Look forward to talking to you perhaps on Thursday.
It is time for us to use our power.